I'm going to project really loud. Today, we're going to start off with some basics of cold approach. So my presentation's snazzy title is How to Approach Any Woman Anywhere. That is a big, scary woman. Those are Louboutin shoes, by the way. If you see shoes with bread on the bottom, those are Louboutins. Girls will be impressed if you know what those are. All right. So first, what is cold approach? Cold approach is when you approach a complete stranger without any form of introduction, any form of eye contact, anything like that. When you basically are approaching with no context or pretext whatsoever. So this is what I did, still do, years and years and years. There's some good things and some bad things about cold approach. The good things are it's constant. You can constantly do cold approach. There's girls walking around that you can meet all the time. The flip side is, if we were to make a chart of like easiness of getting laid, on one side there's like paying for it, which obviously is the easiest, and then on the other side there's cold approach. Cold approach is by far the hardest way to go out and then get laid. Because you got to think about it, it's kind of a weird concept. You're going to go out, find a stranger, and in the course of a few hours or dates, convince her to have sex with you. It's kind of a weird concept. So keep in mind that cold approach is just one way to meet girls. A lot of guys, myself included, get into this and they get really obsessed with cold approach to the point where they get really weird, to the point where, like I said yesterday, they're like, oh, he got laid, but like it wasn't cold approach, so it doesn't count. That's weird. Like I said, I've done at least 10,000. I've been saying 10,000 for a couple of years, so I mean, it's probably more than that at this point. But there's things with cold approach you're never going to be able to control. Sometimes you run into girls who are in a bad mood, sometimes you run into girls who are legitimately taken, sometimes, you know, a knife fight breaks out across the street when you're trying to pull girls from a club in San Diego. These are things that happen. Like, there's a lot of stuff you can't control with the cold approach. So, ideally what we want to do is we want to use the cold approach to kind of sharpen up most of our skills, right? One of the good things about cold approach is you don't have any kind of social precedent with it, right? So, if you go out and you're like completely creepy and horribly embarrassing, as I've been many times, and as you will all be in getting good at this, if you do it to a stranger, it's not that big of a deal. You can walk away, you can leave the bar or club or wherever you did it, and it kind of vanishes. The other thing is you can do a lot of volume of cold approach. You need to squeeze a decent amount of cold approach in the beginning just to get used to some of these tools. A lot of these things we're going to be talking about are repetition-based. What I mean by that is you can understand everything about it. You can understand exactly how an opener works. You can practice it in the mirror over and over and over again. You can't simulate the conditions when you go out and approach girls. So the only way to practice opening is to go out and open. The only way to practice these skills is to go out and use them. That's the big thing. In general, when I teach in my coaching programs, I say 4 hours in field to 1 hour of studying. 4 to 1. Most people flip that. Most people read for 4 hours and go out for one. You don't need to read that much about this stuff. There's no magic pill. A lot of the time, guys are reading because they're looking for an answer. Like my boy right here. They keep looking for more and more information because they think that they'll find a way around the hard work. They'll think that if I just learn, there's got to be a technique so that I don't have to go out and approach 1,000 women. Like there's got to be something where I can just, all of a sudden there would be like a magic shortcut and I can do it. There are two. One of them's called alcohol bottle service and the other one's called cocaine. Besides those, there aren't any cheat codes to this. You have to go out and actually put in the work and practice this stuff. And in the beginning, especially if you're new at this, you will be bad at it. You will be. Trust me, I was horrible at it for months. It's just, there's a certain rhythm and process to socializing. We're going to go over today, but don't think that just because you sat in a seminar room, you're instantly like good and you don't need to go practice this. All right, end of my pep talk for that. All right, so there's some fundamentals when it comes to approaching. Number one is body language. So there are a lot of courses on body language. I personally think they're making way too big of a deal out of it. There's no such thing as like super alpha body language or like mystical body language. The key with body language is you want to look relaxed. Like that's what you're aiming for. You want to fight all those signs of nervousness. Like when you get nervous, your shoulders kind of like bunch up, right? So you want to make sure your shoulders are relaxed. You tend to have, you know, worse posture. So you're thinking of like physical things with body language, you want to kind of lengthen and straighten, but remain relaxed. The other thing is you want to make sure that you make conscious movements. Generally in social interactions, the person who's moving more has less social power. So when you're moving around and you're like all spastic, which a lot of guys do, I've taught a lot of boot camps, I've seen it over and over and over again, what you're doing is you're sending a very clear message that says, I'm nervous. And girls are not attracted to guys who are nervous around them. Because what does it say if you're nervous around a girl? Especially a girl you just met.
Bad in
bed, insecure, not confident, not used to being around girls, right? You're trying, you care too much about this interaction, you're trying to not screw it up. There's a lot of bad things it says about you. So overall, our goal is to be relaxed, to lengthen, to straighten, to take up a decent amount of space. Because in my experience, there's two kinds of bad body language. There's bad body language where people are not taking up enough space, where they're like very afraid of intruding on anyone's space. And then there's bad body language that you'll see a lot of pickup artists do, where they like, they want to go out of their way to take up as much space as possible. So they'll be talking to you and they'll be like, yeah, it's cool. Like, but they're like sitting up in a booth with like their leg up. I'm like, dude, you don't look cool. You look homeless. Like, that's who I lay. If you lay down in a booth or on the floor, you don't look alpha. You look homeless. Like, that's my final answer on that. So, things with body language: relaxed, lengthening, straightening, slow, purposeful movements. You want to basically, there's the message and there's noise, right? We're always trying to convey. This is for anyone who's seen Natural Attraction DVD, that we're fun, interesting, confident, and masculine, right? So that's our basic message. Anything that gets in the way of that is noise. We want to cut down on that signal-to-noise ratio as much as possible. We want to make sure that everything we're communicating with our body, with our smile, facial expressions, which I'm going to get to in a second, is saying we're comfortable and relaxed. That's all. You don't need to be sexy or smoldering or any of these things that I see people talking about. Just relaxed and comfortable is what you're looking for with body language. Next thing, smile. This is out there, it makes a lot of sense, but you'd be amazed how many guys don't smile when they're talking to girls. I understand you're nervous, but you need to smile. And you need to smile before you walk up to them. Like, it's no good to just like smile when they like accept you into the group. You want to look like you're having a good time. That's part of why you're smiling. You want to look friendly and like you're having a good time. Also, facial expressions, we don't have that much time get into that, but facial expressions in general, you want to make sure that your face isn't like completely frozen. There's a lot of guys' problems, especially more technical guys like we tend to get in these courses, is you're not used to expressing emotion on your face. So you're doing something that's like fun or playful and you're like, you're such a brat. It doesn't come across the right way. So be aware of your facial expressions. Next, getting comfortable. This is a big thing. You always want to reposition yourself so that you're the most comfortable person in the interaction. You'll see a lot of guys approach a group of girls and they stand on the outside. And when I used to like nerdier terms, I would call this hemorrhaging social value. It's basically like in those video games where you get stabbed and you just basically bleed out and you can't fight anymore. Like those old sword fighting games, no one knows what I'm talking about. That's cool. I'm old. But that's basically what happens when you stand on the outside. Because no matter how well you're doing, no matter how cool you seem, the fact of the matter is you're still standing on the outside of their group, reinforcing the fact you're a stranger and reinforcing the fact that you care more about the interaction than they did. So we always want to reposition the groups. It's really as simple as kind of moving people with the back of your hand, making sure you have something to lean up against, or sitting down with groups. But the idea is we always want to be the most comfortable person in the interaction. That's really, really important. Because girls are looking at that. You got to think, like, if a really cool guy was talking to girls, would he make himself uncomfortable, or would you make sure that he's comfortable first? All right, vocal tonality. This is a really big thing. Vocal tonality and delivery, I'm gonna kind of squeeze into one here for the sake of time. Number one, you have to be loud, especially in bars and clubs. Like, if girls can't hear you, you're a stranger. This is cold approach. There is no burden on them to be nice to you, or to keep a conversation going, or to go out of their way to listen to what you have to say. So you have to make it really easy for them, which means you have to be so loud that it's socially awkward for them to ignore you. That's the goal. Everyone write that down. It should be socially awkward for them to ignore you. That's how loud you have to be. then you also want to be aware of your tonality. In general, there's three types of tonality. There's tonality where you're seeking rapport. That's where you're basically being nice to people. You'll see this when people are kissing ass. Generally, it sounds like a question. It goes up on the inflection. It's like, hey, how's it going? The voice goes up, right? Trying to rapport, you generally go up. Then there's neutral to rapport. That's basically where your voice stays flat, kind of like a declarative sentence. Basically, there's no up or down flexing. It's a declarative statement. The boy went to the store. And then you have breaking rapport. And breaking rapport is kind of more aggressive. The best example you'll see of breaking rapport tonality is when you go to like hot nightclubs and they have bouncers or like door people. They'll be like, "You on the list?" Like, "You on the list" is not an inherently aggressive question, but because their tonality slants down, it comes off aggressive, and you feel like, oh my god, I need to like make sure that I can qualify myself to this person. So the sweet spot for tonality is neutral or slightly down. You want to be aware of when your tonality arcs up, especially with hotter girls, because they notice it. Like, I've made that mistake a decent amount of times. So be aware of your tonality. You also want to be aware of having a tonality that's engaging and that changes. A lot of guys speak very monotonely. They're talking to girls and they're like, da-da-da-da-da-da. You want to have a tonality that goes up and down, kind of like a rhythm. You want to think about kind of the rhythm at which you speak, as opposed to thinking of everything as like delivering a script robotically. The more you kind of get into it, I think it's kind of like buy your own bullshit. Like, the more you believe in what you're saying, the more you kind of feel strongly about it, the better your delivery will be. But in the meantime, you want to work on having authentic delivery. I recommend recording yourself for stuff like this, because you won't know what your delivery issues are until you hear them. Everyone thinks they have really, really good delivery, and then they hear themselves and they're like, oh my god. So I definitely recommend you just record yourself on your computer, just talking a little bit, and listen to it, and then listen to it objectively. Like, if it was someone else's voice, would you find it obnoxious, or like, you know, like my voice is lower. If you listen to my earlier products, my voice is a lot higher and gay sounding. So, happens. Sometimes you gotta work on your stuff. And tonality can take a really long time. Tonality can be your number one issue. Like, there are certain guys who, their tonality makes them sound sarcastic even when they're not being, and that can be a real problem throughout their game. So, you gotta be aware of how your tonality can run. Probably not you. Alright. I touched on this a little bit yesterday. I want to go over it in a little bit more detail today. That's the idea of going for social comfort first. One of the reasons I think pickup artists get made fun of a lot is that Mr. E is just not that self-aware, and most people rip off his system. So he doesn't realize that he kind of establishes social comfort first. If you look at a lot of the techniques or tactics, there's things to make people comfortable. Things like false time constraints, things like opinion openers, neutral conversational subjects. They just don't call it that. Social comfort is basically what I explained yesterday. It's the idea that when you approach someone, you've got to fill the gap between your opener and the actual attraction techniques. You can't start trying to attract a woman until you've actually gotten her socially comfortable with interacting. Until she wants to have a conversation with you, your attraction techniques are useless. Right? That's why when you break rapport or tease a girl who's not really that interested, it just falls completely flat. Because you can't break rapport with someone who doesn't want to talk to you. It's like if the homeless person comes up to you and is like, hey, you're a loser. You're like, I care, right? So this is really important because it allows us to build a small level of rapport in order to break it. And breaking rapport is basically how you start the attraction phase. Generally, what you want to do is you want to break rapport with people once you have it with just the girl you're attracted to. Because when you break rapport with people, they chase it. It's basically the idea of being nice to someone first and then switching it up and doing something not so nice. You can't just come in and do things not so nice. I mean, sometimes you can, but it's usually the chicks that are messed up and low self-esteem. Usually, you want to establish a little rapport first, and then you break it with teasing or back turns or whatever. So, I want to give you a couple of just social comfort techniques. There's a whole hours and hours of the stuff that I teach, but there's a couple of simple ones that you can use today. The first one is turning questions into statements. Questions are good if you know how to use them. The problem is most guys don't know how to use questions. What they do is they just keep asking endless questions without doing anything with them. Like, hey, where are you from? And the girl says something, they're like, cool. And they're like, what do you do? And the girl says something, and they're like, cool. If you're going to use a question, you want to do it to use one of three things. You want to either use it to relate. So, like, I might ask a girl where she's from in order to relate something like that. Like, I've traveled a lot, so I have a lot of stories about various places, so there's very few places that I haven't been or know someone or this, that, or the other. But you can always relate to, like, whether or not you wanted to know more about that place, anything you've kind of heard, any stereotype about that. So you can use questions to relate. You can use questions to set up your own stories and to steer the conversation. You know, I might say, you know, like, you guys ever been to the Comedy Store in order to, like, steer a conversation towards something I want to talk about comedy related. And you can use questions to tease girls. I might ask a girl where she's from, and then she's like, the Valley. I might just be like, I'm sorry. And she's like, what? I'm like, oh, I'm just sorry. The Valley sucks. Right? So those are the ways to use questions. Instead, what most guys do is they just ask questions, and then they just ask another one. Don't use questions unless you know what you're using them for. In the other instances, you can turn questions into statements. Statements are way better because they give a girl more to latch on to. There's more chances for her to be input given and interactive. And they don't ask for anything from someone. Part of it is also that psychologically we have something called the reciprocity principle. This is actually scientifically why question pickups don't work. Because human beings are not like super well equipped for survival, we had to become like social animals and band together in order to survive, right? So inbred into us is this idea of reciprocity, which is that if someone tells you something about themselves or does something for you first, you're going to be more likely to do that. That's why when you ask girls a lot of questions without talking about yourself, you're not giving them anything about yourself. So they just feel like you're taking, and it turns off this reciprocity, and now they don't want to tell you stuff after a while. So that's scientifically why it doesn't work. But in the meantime, use them for steering or use them in order to turn them into questions, into statements. You know, where are you from can become, you seem like an East Coast girl. What do you do can be like, you seem like you would be a lawyer. Basically, you're going to draw inferences. And what's going to happen is two things. One, if you hit it right, you're going to seem like you're really intuitive, right? Like, you get pretty good at this. This is a skill called warm reading. But basically, you should always be asking yourself, what kind of girl is this, you know, anyway, just because you want to be kind of tailoring to the specific situation. But, you know, take some inferences. What does it seem like she does? Does it seem like she's got kind of like a white-collar job? Does it seem like she works at a club? Does it seem like she, you know, is a teacher? There's a lot of different things you can kind of figure out. But by making guesses first in the form of statements, if you get it right, you look cool, and if you get it wrong, you're going to get the information anyway without burning that question, without being reaching for rapport. So keep that in mind. Another one is the idea of grounding yourself. Grounding yourself is pretty simple. Grounding is basically how you talk about yourself. So grounding comes from the idea that you wanted to ground your identity back in the day, but that's kind of lame. So instead what we want to do is we want to kind of ground ourselves by giving an idea of who we are and how we're going to act in the future, right? Grounding is about giving a snapshot of your personality so that girls understand what to expect moving on. So for example, like when I'm talking to girls early on, I might say something like, you know, well, I have three sisters, so like I, you know, have probably a different perspective on women than most guys. Or I might say something like, you know, well, I am a writer, so I'm arrogant enough to believe that people should listen to my opinions. And these are how you bring up stuff in your life that you want to talk about by grounding it into your personality, giving a context to how you act, right? Basically, the basic formula for grounding is, I grew up or had this experience which makes me that way. And that's how you bring up subjects and get into those things we were talking about yesterday. We talked about your subjects you're good at. You've got to ground yourself in order to be able to move into those subjects. You think about it as kind of moving the conversation in a way that makes sense. So that people aren't asking, like, why are you telling me this? A lot of the time, guys will come up with really random stories and stuff that they've read online or whatever, and it doesn't really make them a real person. Grounding is really helpful because it gives an idea of who you are, what some of your background is, and filling in those empty questions that girls need to know anyway before they sleep with you. Like, no girl's going to sleep with you before she knows whether or not you have brothers or sisters or whatever. So all that stuff needs to be taken care of, and grounding is how you do that. And then ultimately, once you have social comfort, you want to then break rapport in order to start building attraction, right? Once you're talking, they're enjoying the conversation, again, not attractive, just they don't think you're a weirdo, that you seem like a nice guy. That's what social comfort's about first. Until you can establish that, and some of you will establish it quicker than other people, hold on a second. But until you can establish that they're actually involved in the conversation, it's real easy. You basically are looking for investment. If you ask a question, do they answer it with a one-word answer, or do they like elaborate? If you use an open loop, if for example I say, you know, I'm totally in the wrong business because I hate flying, and the girl doesn't ask me what my job is, she's not that invested, right? I don't have any social comfort. She doesn't really want to have this conversation. until you switch into that, out of that mode, out of the apathy and into social comfort, all your attraction techniques are just going to be like throwing paint on a wall. Yeah.
Can you go over some things that are common that guys do to make girls creeped out in the social comfort?
Sure. Asking too many questions is probably the biggest one without talking about yourself. Uncomfortable silences. You can't have uncomfortable silences. You might as well just end the interaction. Like, girls hate social awkwardness. If you make it socially awkward, they're going to be done. Leaning in too much. If you're going to lean in, you want to lean into the side and not like straight into a girl's face. A lot of guys do that wrong. Touching too like intimately, like lower back touching like too early on is really creepy. What else is just straight creepy?
My thing I've been always getting
ignoring friends is creepy.
Ignoring their friends.
Okay. Yeah.
I think I care too much, and that makes
being too intense. That's definitely an issue. Yeah, like if it seems like you're really into the conversation, like especially with cold approach. Cold approach is about who cares less. Whoever cares less has more power in the social interaction in cold approach. So if you come in and you're like really into it and you're like, oh my God, you know, like you're so hot and I just have to make this work, you're already coming in from a bad position. So a lot of the time, you've got to have more of a take it or leave it attitude in cold approach. Like, and you've got to make it fun. Fun is the ultimate attraction switch. Like, you'll hear me harp on this over and over again. Like, if the girls don't seem like they're having fun, you are fucking up. Like, there's no other answer. If the girl doesn't seem like she's having fun, you are making mistakes. So, openers. Openers serve one function and one function only, and that's to start a conversation. You don't need a perfect opener. There is no perfect opener. The only thing you want to really think about is situational relevance. Situational relevance is like the number one rule of pickup. If something doesn't make sense in the given situation, it's wrong. I don't care what the traditional advice is. For example, it is situationally irrelevant to chase a girl down the street, tap her on the shoulder, and be like, hey, I need a quick female opinion. That's really wrong, right? It's also situationally irrelevant when you see a girl making out with her boyfriend to walk up and be like, hey, I know this is really weird, but I thought you were adorable and I had to come meet you. Right? So we want to be situationally relevant. If a girl's sitting down and has more time, you can use an opener that takes more time. If a girl's walking down the street, you want to use something that's faster. That's the idea of situational relevance. We'll be there. All right, so direct approaches, simplest form of conversation, you're basically just indicating interest. Example is, hey, you guys are adorable, I had to come meet you, I'm John. You know, that I noticed you doing X, I had to come say Y, that's another example of a direct approach. We have I know you openers. These are my new favorite ones. I know you openers basically start by pretending you already know the girl. And this can be done like seriously, or it can be done in like a playful way, right? So they all start with I know you. So for example, like, I know you, you're the sexy shoe girl, you work at this office down, this actually happened. I was like, you work at this office down off like 37th and Broadway. My friend Sarah works there. We're always trying to figure out, because this girl would switch her shoes like two or three times a day. We're always trying to figure out why you change your shoes so much. And what's going to happen is the girl's going to be like, no, that's not me. But if you do them in a playful way, she'll go along with the joke for the most part of it. And again, then you transition off. These aren't magic, but they start a conversation, they get some sort of reaction, and you can kind of move on. Open loop openers. He's one of my favorites. Open loop openers start a conversation by making a statement that's completely ambiguous. So, for example, did you pick the fingers you wear your rings on? Right? That's a great opener, because everyone's going to wonder what the hell you're talking about. Do you know what that necklace means? That's an interesting tattoo. That's an interesting outfit. This is one of my favorite ones for night. That's an interesting outfit, because then girls will inevitably be like, what does that mean? And you can respond, I mean, it's interesting, which is fun. So, these are good because they play off the human curiosity. Open loops are just uncompleted thoughts. It's psychologically very taxing to us to have open loops. Like, we like closure. We need closure. And then opinion opener. So here, these have probably been done to death. But the thing we copy down is this structure. You can make anything into an opinion opener if you follow this basic structure. All opinion openers have a hook question. So for example, the friend zone opener I created a while ago. You go, hey, you know, what can a guy do when he's stuck in a friend zone with a girl? All right. Then the girls are going to answer. You have to let them answer. This isn't a monologue. This is the part that people always screw up. You want to tease them on their answer. You're looking for ways to tease girls. Whatever their answer is, tease them on it. Whatever their answer is, it's wrong. A girl has never had the right answer on an opinion opener question in the 6 years that I've been doing it. Why? Because I know how to use fucking opinion openers. And then you want to ground the opener. You want to basically explain the reason I'm asking is. So the reason I'm asking is my friend Dave is like obsessed with our friend Sarah, and they're going to Vegas, and he got her a hotel room with one bed. And he's going to like try to surprise her with the one bed thing. That's creepy, right? And then you transition off the topic. You don't want to milk these openers. A big mistake guys make with opinion openers is they have a 10-minute conversation about friend zones or various things. All right. So, role play openers. These are fun because these start the conversation in a fun, playful way by creating like a make-believe situation. These are also things that guys don't do. Role plays, when you do, guys like roll their eyes at them, girls think they're awesome. So examples, you can ask girls if they want to be in your fan club and talk about reasons they should be your fan. You can also ask girls if they're stalking you. I do that a lot. And I'm like, you were, it was really good. And like, I haven't had a hot stalker in a while. Alright, so those are openers. I kind of zoomed through them here. Let's recap and we're going to do some approaches real quick to run low on time. So we talked about cold approach. It's not the be-all and end-all of everything. I told you a little bit about my history with it. You want cold approach to be no more than basically a third of your results in women. We talked about fundamentals, body language, facial expression, making yourself comfortable, social comfort, etc. And we went over five different types of openers. Opinion openers, role play openers, I know you openers, open loops, and direct.
It is attraction, right? This is a whole big esoteric thing that we try and learn about. First of all, do you really need this? I mean, think about it. Men and women have been procreating for umpteen thousands of years now. Ultimately, you would probably find a woman, get laid, have kids, all that cool stuff. But you got to ask yourself, and this is something I notice in every guy that I talk to, is did that guy actually choose that relationship or was he chosen? Right? You see it in a lot of guys. I mean, a lot of guys. A shocking amount of guys. Did they fall into it? Did fate, luck, destiny have a real say in that? Or did he consciously choose the woman he's with? And it's really important, especially with the kind of, you wonder why we have divorce rates like we do? Okay? Most of them initiated by women, the divorces, that is. Most guys, fate, luck, and chance is no way to live your life. Fate, luck, and chance, like I said, is no way to live your life. You just don't want to live your life that way, and that's why we're here. We're taking ownership of something that most guys will never try to take control of. Most guys don't choose the woman they end up with, and most guys also blame their failures on external circumstances. It's our natural habit to do this because it's easier to accept that it's something external than it's something we need to change about ourselves, right? Okay? So that's what a lot of learning how to be attractive to women is about. First step is a reframe. Before you even think about being attractive to women, I want you to reframe how you think about women. Because this is going to lead into exactly how you approach women and how you feel about women. We talked yesterday about women as cheaters. There's a high percentage of women. They cheat at least as much, if not more, than men. Okay? They do it for many different reasons. Some of them match up to why guys do it, just for the sex. A lot of it's for emotion as well. Women being angels and pure. Women are brought up to be sugar and spice and everything nice, and men are, was it snails and something and puppy dog tails? Great rhyme, huh? It starts out a guy's life feeling really good about himself. What about women in abuse? They talk about this too. It's a dynamic. It's not just the man. It's usually a woman, an unhealthy woman and man, an unhealthy woman inciting that kind of violence. I'm not saying that women deserve it or anything like that. You guys know what I mean. Women in scarcity. How many women are there on this planet, guys? Few? Think you could find one? Yeah, you can find a lot. You will never be able to go through enough women in your life. So we got to stop thinking about women in terms of scarcity. I'm going to talk a little bit more about scarcity in my inner game part. So I want you, again, reduce the importance of your interactions on women, with women. Stop making it an event. It's not a big deal. The more you can do that by making it incorporated into your lifestyle, the better. So what is attraction? What is attractive? A lot of it is value, perceived value by each person. We're all dialed into WIIFM radio. You guys know what that stands for, right? Yeah. What's in it for me? It's human nature. It's okay. We are naturally selfish. It's how we survived. Altruistic selfishness is what we aim for, which is the selfishness like they talk about on the plane, the air thing falls down, you put it on yourself first so that you can stay alive long enough to help the guy next to you or gal next to you. There's two primary, I consider two very important parts of attraction that you need to focus on. One is mating strategy. This is the stuff that's instinctual that you can't control. So we try and do that as much as possible. We do the things that are instinctually attractive. Kino, touching. That's instinctually attractive because we respond with certain hormones and endorphins and things like that. Those are the things you typically can't control. Yes, there are visual elements, and those are ones that guys get caught up on a lot. Dude, I gotta be buff like that dude on Men's Health with a 12-pack, you know? No, you don't. You don't. You should be fit, but you don't need to be rip-roaring fit. The second side of that, the first side is the stuff you largely can't control. The second is happiness. The happiness that you can bring to her. The happiness that she sees that she can benefit from by being with you. And that's pretty broad, so I'll get specific with that. Long-term, she's looking at, how would this guy enhance my life? In the short term, when you're first meeting her, your only focus is on fun. Your only focus is on fun. That's how she interprets your value. How fun can you make her life in that moment? Because that is what we are attracted to, right? Who are the people you want to reassociate with? The ones that made you feel good in the moment and you know they'd be fun, right? Nobody wants to hang out with a downer. Short term, this is the true fact. Okay, this is where we can get into some real divides with the romantics in the audience versus the realists. But, and I like to think I'm both. I was really a heavy romantic. Love is largely a chemical reaction. It's mostly chemical. You've been set up to go through this process. You meet a woman, certain chemicals hit your system, literally like crack cocaine. It's exactly like being hit with crack. You get juiced up, you get that feeling. You guys have experienced this, right? It's like when you get that crush on a girl, it's that feeling you just, wow, that's just dynamite, man. It's outstanding. And that's what gets you started on that train of addiction. Love later turns into heroin. Heroin is the long, cool, oh, I feel so good, dude. But you don't realize it. It's very subtle. Until what happens? When it's taken away, then you feel it. It's true. This is the way that your bodies react. It's largely that. It's also a rational process, but mostly it starts out with chemicals. That's how we evolved to stay together, so that guys would stay with a woman long enough and not just go off and boff everything that moves. He does stay with women, but she knows that the longer she can keep you around, the longer that she doesn't know this, but that heroin effect takes over. Okay, so yes, we're all pushers. We're all druggies. Even in this age of you don't have to get pregnant when you have sex, she's still hardwired by evolution and genetics to not, she still feels the other way. She still feels that it's a risk. Attraction is an emotional response. Just remember that. Attraction is an emotional response. So the core principles. Fun is going to be a part of your core identity. It has to be a part of your core identity. Okay, if you're one of those guys that's like, oh man, I know I'm kind of fun. I mean, raise your hand. Do you think you're fun? Every guy thinks he's fun, right? And you do have to do a reality check sometimes. Are you really fun? Because I wasn't fun for a long time. I can be a pretty, I call it the dark, sarcastic son of a bitch phase that I get into, where I can be a little bit down on the world, a little bit cynical. But I had to fight a long time to get past that. That's again part of that inner game thing. To make yourself fun, you got to start really thinking outside of the box. Attraction is, if you want to think about it in terms of a process, it's falling. We call it falling in love, don't we? We don't call it being pushed into love. It doesn't work that way. So your goal when you're trying to attract a woman, or when it's part of your conscious process anyways, part of it is, think about this. You want to make her believe that she's more into you than you are into her. Okay? You have to show some interest. You have to express some, and you should be close up there. But you want her to believe on a certain level that she's just a little bit more into you than you are into her. This helps you with the process of qualification and keeping her interest, right? Gives her something to chase too. Play a little bit hard to get. Be the prize. You've heard that, right? Be the prize. Really important. What about the lottery winner? This is a great mind game I have for people. Let me ask you this. Pretend for a moment that you're in a room and a guy walks up to you and says, look, I'm here to present $1 million to that chick over there. I'm going to give you the check and I want you to go do it. Would you have any problem doing it?
No.
Be easy, wouldn't it? In fact, it'd be kind of fun, right? You can imagine the look on her face when you hand her a check for $1 million. She's gonna be like, ah! Jump you right on the spot. Now I want you to think about this for an instance. What you have to give her as a man is worth more than $1 million. So you should be thinking about yourself in that terms. When you walk up and start talking to a woman, you are giving her her winning lottery ticket. That's the frame you gotta come from, really. That's the ultimate positive frame of power that a man has. Is that what you have to give her is more valuable than what $1 million would give her. And quite honestly, money, you know, it's one thing. It buys you experience if you know how to use it, but most people don't. Giving her that experience, way more than $1 million. Remember how dealers turn people into addicts? How do they do it? First one's free, right? Hey, it's on me, man. Get high, have a blast. Next one, I don't know, you know, I'll give you a little bit, but now it's gonna cost you. It's a similar process, right? Give fun for free, but after a while, you do have to cut it off. You have to understand that you have to get something out of this too. What is not fun? Let's talk about that for a second. It's really important. What is not fun to chicks? Energy vampires. Big, big, big thing, especially with a lot of guys I've coached, is they don't realize that they're sapping and sucking energy. One giant energy suck. You can't do that. You can't drain energy. You must be adding energy to what she has. If you're taking it from, you're not going to attract a woman. Second thing, contention and disagreement. It's not fun. Good contention. There's a good form of it. But for the most part, guys that get into arguments about shit, oh God, I see guys all the time. They want to be right. They don't want to get laid. Which is a preferable option? Negative attitude. Talk about that one again a little bit too. And one big, big, big one here is being unmotivated and lackadaisical. It's that lack of drive and passion. A lot of guys, you know, but I'm supposed to be laid back, right? Yeah, you're supposed to be laid back with a sense of purpose, with some energy, with some forward motion to you, right? Right. Yeah. Another thing is when you're pushing yourself onto her or into the conversation, I call this ego pushing. And I think everybody here knows what I'm talking about. We've all done it, especially we do it in conversation with guys all the time, right? Because we're all just like, so it's one-upmanship, chest bumping. I got to get a little bit of, you know, male status out of the conversation. That shit does not fly in conversations with women. It's got to be dropped, and you got to find a way to actually merge into a conversation with them, with women on a different level. So what is fun? Let's flip that around. What's fun? Like I said, everybody thinks they're fun, right? Fun is not draining energy, it's giving it. It's being different. It's being different than what she expects. Okay? I know this is, I'm gonna give you some specifics later on about this stuff, but and it mostly comes through in conversation. Being different does not have to be cool, pick up attire, or any of that stuff. It's mostly comprised of your attitude going in. Challenging expectations. I told you about conversation and how we steer and re-steer conversation, right? Challenging her expectations about where the conversation is going, what you're about, you know, things like that. Again, I got some really cool stuff. I know I'm teasing you, man. Teasing you. You're gonna have some really good stuff with this in the conversation section. Here's a big one about fun that most guys overlook. Playful and childlike. Playful and childlike. Not childish. Do you get the difference? Childish is the It's the brattier behavior. Childlike is that playful fun of anything could fucking happen. Anything could happen in this conversation, and I'm gonna be cool with it, and you're gonna be cool with it, and we're gonna have a goofy time about it. Push-pull. Raise your hand if you've heard of push-pull. I think this is the most important concept in attraction and building attraction. It really is the most important thing. It's the thing I learned first, and it's maintained over the years as being the one consistent element that really makes a difference, because attraction with a woman is not arm wrestling, it's not a shoving match, it's not a kidnap, it's a tug of war. You pull a little bit and you let it out a little bit. And you pull a little bit and you let it out a little bit. I'm gonna give you a couple of methods for doing this. Essentially, you wanna create an energy ride for a woman in conversation. You want to have rides up and rides down and just like wild, wild things. And it's counter to men's nature to do this. We don't want that. Men want smooth waters. Our lives, historically and evolutionary speaking, have been all about chaos. We've got to fight for survival. We got to be the protector. Shit just happens and we're like, oh, I got to take care of this. I got to take care of that. And we want cool, smooth waters. That's what we are all about in a lot of ways. Women don't. They want that ride. So we have to find ways of giving it to them. I'll give you an example of how to do this in conversation. This is good stuff. Number one, devil's advocate. Do devil's advocate with women in conversations. Take her opinion about something and play both sides of it. Even if you agree with it, play both sides of it. I love doing that. Like when we see eye to eye on something, like I don't like doing typically the political or sex stuff, but maybe it's like an opinion opener where you talk about the whole friend zone thing, and she's actually, you feel like she's on the mark, and you're like, yeah, but what if, you know, what if the guy's just being needy, you know? Play both sides of it. Do the devil's advocate thing. It's really effective because, again, we don't want to just ride one energy level. We want to pull it up, push it down. Second one, use reverse psychology. I love doing this one because it's just, it's one of those ones that we all know, but when somebody uses it on you, you don't see it till later, and you're like, one of the things I like to say to women, I'll give you an example, is you have troubles trusting guys, don't you? Now, what am I doing there? I'm doing two things. I'm gently pushing her to say, no, I trust guys, you know? I'm forcing her to experience what I want her to experience, which is being trusting, trust me. I'm not forcing her, but you know what I mean. The third is contradicting yourself on purpose. This is a good one. This is a really good one. It shows, don't do this too much or you'll seem crazy, but use it frequently. Here's an example. You're in a conversation, you're talking about, you know, I really feel for the poor. They've got a bad situation. It doesn't get better, especially in the United States where we have this growing middle class. Blah, 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 blah. Later on in the conversation, I'll say something like, you know what? I think it's really important that everybody goes after the wealth they want in life. I think being rich, you know, maybe in an emotional sense and physical sense, is really important. Did it seem like I'm contradicting myself?
Possibly.
But at the same time, I'm just playing with the energy, aren't I? I can hold two differing concepts in my head at the same time. You ever heard that phrase?
What was the first one?
Pardon me?
What was the first one?
The first one was, I feel for the poor, right? I have a sympathy for poor people, people without means, people without money and all that, you know, it really sucks. I'm not really saying I hate the rich, but, okay, so play that. Contradict yourself on purpose. It's really good. It shows a person that can experience two differing things in their head at the same time. Yesterday, I talked a little bit about social work. Social workers are awesome. I think guys, anybody here in social work by any chance? No? If you have a friend that's in social work, yeah, there's like offshoots of it too. I had a girlfriend that was a social worker. There's great stuff that they learn. They learn about breaking them down. Breaking them down is the process of getting kids that, you know, maybe in an at-risk neighborhood, these kids that have really, really tough social shields. They're carrying a very strong shield to keep them from being vulnerable, right? Because they're in an environment where being vulnerable is it's tantamount to being just prey, right? But she learns techniques for breaking people down. Because you do run into situations, for you guys that do night game and you go to clubs, you're gonna run into situations with women where she's not immediately going to be amenable and welcoming and pull you in, right? And you gotta work a little bit for it, and that's okay. How much you work for it, that's a matter of personal taste. I don't like to do it a lot, I know John doesn't either. You gotta figure out how big and thick her emotional shield is, okay? Number one, do you really wanna go through all that effort? But the biggest criteria for me, and this speaks of qualification, the biggest and most important thing for me for a woman is seeing how quick she gets real. By real, what I mean is how willing is she to talk about what's really going on, what's really happening. A couple of you guys, I forget who I talked to when we were doing the approach exercise, but we were talking about what do you do when these weird things come up, like you accidentally spit and the spit comes out. Well, the first thing I think of is, oh, I'm sorry, you didn't want to shower tonight, did you? You know. But a lot of guys, what do? We want to cover that up and be like, whoo, didn't happen, la 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 la, I can't hear you. That's what we're doing in our mind, right? We're doing a psychological version of la 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 la, I can't hear you. We try and pretend it didn't happen. What happens then? Women actually lose attraction because of that, because you're not willing to get real. Okay, so get real, anything. I'm gonna come up with it, I'm straining at the bit, I wanna tell you my cool technique for what happens in an uncomfortable silence, but I'm gonna save that one. Tease. If you allow her to leverage her pretenses, your interaction will be built on sand and it will crumble. Let me say that again. If you allow her to leverage her pretenses, your interaction will be built on sand and it will crumble. By pretenses, what I mean is if you allow her to be all glossy talk up here, like la la la, I'm pretending all that stuff underneath doesn't happen, like foul pause, like uncomfortable silences, like the reality of conversation. If you let it be very pretentious, it's gonna fold on you, basically. The quicker you can get to a reality state with her, and I'll, again, show you some cool techniques for that. So is she cool? Does she get real? That's my number one primary criteria for checking for women. So four steps on this. Number one, ask yourself, do I really want to bother? Do I really want to break her down and get past this boundary? Is she just a little bit too shielded, too guarded, too bitchy? It's fine. Make yourself that decision. Number two, use humor, never anger or force. I call this a choice between using, you know, we all have boundaries, personal boundaries we have to guard. Some guys get a little bit edgy about it. I used to be kind of a dick about this, and I would guard my personal boundary with what I call the Nazi. The Nazi would guard it, and he wasn't a very cool guy. He was mean, he was kind of like pissy. You know, if a woman flaked on me, you don't do that to me. And, you know, that's definitely not cool. So I changed it. Instead of patrolling your boundaries with a Nazi, patrol with a comedian. It works much, much better, and it totally has the right intended effect. A woman sees that you are capable of being relaxed and cool and chilled. Number three, tease gently. Tease gently. Whatever the situation is, I'll give you an example. I'm on the phone with this girl, and I remember this clearly. It was some chick I met online. Really, really cute. And I'm talking to her on the phone, and immediately she's got this big defensive qualification shield up. And I'm like, this is not cool. I'm like, I made a decision early on in the conversation. I'm like, this one's already done, but I'm going to play with it and have fun. That's an important thing to do too, by the way. If you need to, make a decision early on in the conversation, okay, this is done, but I'm going to stick in here and have a little fun with it. Because you cut off your risk and loss, right? It's like a stop loss on a stock. So I stayed in the conversation a little bit longer, and I stopped her at one point and I said, you know what? I'm really not all into this conversation. I don't think we really match up all that well. Probably get going. And she's like, what? She was totally blown away by that. Apparently nobody in her life has done this, right? But she was just freaked out by the fact that she had just been called on her shit. In a nice way. I'm just like, you know what? It's not for me. I'm not really into this. I really like chicks that are kind of cool and easy to get along with, and it's not very good. So, long story short, she basically kept me on the phone for the next 15 minutes, and I still cut her off. I still didn't meet with her. Okay? An important thing to do for you, by the way, and for your inner game, is turn a lot of women down. Even, especially, here's a big one, turn down a woman you want. Turn down a woman you want. All right, good. Vulnerability, really quick. When you're in conversation, reveal a vulnerability. Reveal something about you that could be considered a liability, and maybe in some situations. This is getting real, right? Guys, it might be a little bit balding. Talk about it. Just kind of joke about it. Put it aside. Like, immediately, you don't care about it. Most guys don't do that. Most guys try and la 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 la. We don't want to acknowledge it. For me, it used to be my weight. I'm a fairly thin guy. But I know now that I've got what they call the leopard power in the martial arts, which is I have a lot of strength for my size, which I'm totally cool with, but I make fun about it. You know, my mom used to say, if I turned sideways in the shower, I'd never get wet. It's just dumb little jokes like that. So do it in a humorous way. It communicates that you can survive in spite of it. What I'm communicating is that I can survive in spite of that little thing. Could be anything, bald, skinny. By the way, a great thing to pull out is feminine perspective on topics. Pull out a commonly held feminine perspective that you understand and bring it into the conversation. What I mean by that is how women think about things. I'll give you specific examples about that when we get to conversation. One example is, if you guys know about this, but when women wear bras, it tends to like bind up here under the armpit a little bit. And I always joke with them, I'm like, well, if I fidget a little bit and she asks me what's going on, I'm like, ah, my bra just kind of gets me right under here. How about you? And they think it's hysterical because guys don't typically know that that's what happens with women and their bras and their little undergarment things. So, little funny things. I also like tell her, you know what? I love candles. Love candles. It's kind of feminine, but it gives her that edge that she might be thinking, oh, this guy's some kind of aggro guy. Cold reading. Raise your hand if you know what cold reading is. Basically, it's reading somebody without knowing them or pretending that you do. Now, there's an important distinction here I want to make because a lot of guys are like, dude, you're always talking about being genuine and authentic. How could you do that? The best way to do cold reading is to try to do it in an authentic way. Try to genuinely see that woman and see things about her personality. Because trust me, when you can do this, I was on the phone with Adam Galad about this just the other day. We were talking about this. It will seriously seem like almost like a magical power to women. They will really, really dig you when you can do this. And you can get good at it fairly quickly, and you start by doing it sort of artificially. Vague statement that we're gonna, it's a vague statement that a person will process as being very specific to them. You know, here's an example. There's three methods typically. You give them the one side and the opposite. There's a side of you that's very, you know, very shielded, very guarded, and very protected, but there's another shield of you that just loves to just talk about your life and just like let it out because you feel so pressured all the time. women will see that. Everybody sees that as being true about themselves. We all have these two sides. Outside, inside. On the outside, you seem like kind of a party girl, but I bet you on the inside, you'd love to just sit home in your bathrobe and watch TV. You like to watch Grey's Anatomy, right? Okay? And another one is appearances are deceiving. You know, it's a similar form of the outside and inside, but appearances are deceiving with you. You try and present yourself as this, but I see you as that. Again, the best way is to really see their personality and make interpretations about it. Homework for you guys. Two shows I want you to watch. These are cool shows. If you're not already watching them, you should check them out. Number one is Criminal Minds. It's one of the CBS crime shows. Really good because it's profiling. It's about reading people's personalities. And number two, I love this show. And the funny thing is, I haven't been getting around to the latest season. Lie to Me. You guys seen Lie to Me? Excellent show. It's based on Paul Ekman's research. You see his name in the credits too. All about face, reading body language. Again, I'm going to caution you, don't read body language. It's a totally worthless part of pickup. Don't try and read a woman's body language. It's really pretty much meaningless. You can feel it out really quick. If she turns away, that's bad body language. Everything else, forget it. Because what do you do when you're reading body language? I'm back up on my head. Oh, quick. Fun stuff, fun locations, fun things to do. Just so you guys have this. Fun is easy. Create a list of fun things to do. Fun locations to go to. Wherever you live, there's fun places to go, especially here in LA and like where I live up north. Interactivity is important. First date should be all about interactivity. No movies, nothing sitting side by side in the dark. Okay? Go to arcades. Go to funky stores. Mistakes are easy to recover. They're really easy to recover from. But not doing something, you can never recover from that. My mom used to tell me back when she was alive, she used to say, you know, it's better to regret the things you did do than the things you didn't do. It took me a long time to really absorb that one. Because I'm like, but I always remember the shit I did that I was like, arr, arr. But then I remember, you know what, there's things that I did that I didn't do that I wish I had, the women I hadn't gone after. I can think of one in my mind right immediately that I never went after, and if I could go back in time, I'd gladly do it. You use that kind of pain, though. That's leveraging pain, right? This is an inner game trick. Looking back on your life and seeing those events of those opportunities you missed and you didn't take the advantage on, you didn't act on, you should be using that as being kick-ass energy for when you go into a set and be like, wait a minute, I know later on I'm going to be fucking pissed if I don't do this. I'm going. Okay? Seriously, use the anger. Men have natural anger that we do not tap into, and we need to tap into it. Okay? In a creative and resourceful way, which is channeling it the right way. The big thing I want you to come away from what I'm about to talk about is outer game is connected right to your inner game. You can't separate the two. So the things that you do give you a certain way of thinking and affect how you think about things. The way I started about this and the way I started in the whole inner game thing was everything came down to thought experiments. It's just the same way Einstein thought of his theory of relativity. He thought about what would happen if I was driving a car at the speed of light and I flicked on the headlamps. Pretty cool thought. I mean, think of what that created for us. It created the theory of relativity and all the other things he came up with, including, unfortunately, the atomic bomb. It was a brilliant concept. It was a thought experiment. That's where it all came from. Because inner game is really easy when you know what to do. The secret is to make it outer game after you come to a realization. All right? And we're going to talk about that. Keep it simple. The rule still applies, especially in inner game. If you can't explain something simply, you probably don't know it well enough. Okay? I find this happening all the time. If I'm stumbling over an explanation of something, I probably don't understand the situation well enough to come up with a simple thing. To give you an example, last night, I forgot who I was talking to or who was came up with a question, but and John just said, well, don't put yourself in that situation. It's like, oh, yeah, that's it right there, the easy solution. If it's simple, it tends to be the most thing. It's Occam's razor, for those of you that have heard that term. Occam's razor means the simplest solution tends to be the most accurate. All inner game work is easy and simple. Just resign yourself to that fact, and it becomes easier. The primary components of your inner game are this. You might want to write these down. Number one, self-confidence. It's that feeling that I can do that. Sense of humor. I'm just giving you basic descriptions here, by the way. We can expand on these later. Sense of humor is the second one. I call these the three S's. This is the second one. Sense of humor, which really translates into flexible attitude. Flexibility and attitude and the way you think. You guys should be taking notes. Self-control is the third one, especially emotional self-control. How you control your emotions is typically how a woman can perceive your sense of inner game. Okay, because we as humans have a three-stage ability that nothing else on this planet has. It's called stimulus, pause, and response. Most animals just have stimulus, response. You poke them with a stick, they jump, or they bite you. Human beings have the ability to pause in between and change what we think and how we respond. It's very unique. It's allowed us to do this, to create society and civilization. Sense of humor, by the way, a lot of guys are like caught up in this one. We'll talk about little things. You'll see how we, John and I, demonstrate our sense of humor, how you demonstrate yours. It's all an individual thing. There are ways to learn it and do it. I highly recommend stand-up and things like that. But sense of humor is a primal signal of intelligence. It's advanced pattern recognition. To make it sound cool and technical. I like that. Advanced pattern recognition. But that's what it is. Having a good sense of humor means you can see patterns in things that most other guys can't. That's what it communicates to a woman. And what does that mean? You're probably more likely to survive. Emotional self-control, of those three, I consider to be probably one of the most powerful and one of the ones that most guys need to work on the most. Not even just the emotions you display, but the emotions you feel inside. I'm going to tell you about how we do that. Emotional control and management. 90% of inner game, I think, like I was just saying, is simply controlling your emotions. Controlling your emotions. We have the triune brain. Do you guys know what the triune brain is? Triune brain is a model for thinking about how your brain developed. The first thing to develop was the lizard brain. That keeps your heart pumping, your lungs going, and you can run like a lizard when somebody attacks you. The second part is the emotional brain or the limbic brain. That's the part of the brain that has emotional response and experience. We feel for other things. Mammals have this, the ability to bond and attach and feel emotions. And the third is the neocortex, the intelligent part of your brain that allows you to do rational thinking. And we know how well that works for us when it comes to pickup and attraction, right? I'm going to give you, I don't have it on the slide, I have it coming up, so we'll talk about this, but remind me if for some reason it gets moved, is the what I call the oh shit process. It's a way of handling panic. How many of you guys have ever gotten into a situation with a woman where you're kind of in a little emotional panic? Everybody raise your hand, you've all been there, right? It's usually at that point where, I don't know what the fuck to say next. Panic and anxiety management is important across the board in your life. Forget just women. Handling emotions with everything in your life. Totally important, and I'm so glad I learned this. And I'm going to pass this guy on to you guys too. Handling basically stress hijacks. Stress hijacks have this effect on you. When you're in an interaction with a woman and you have that stress response of having a panic, the first thing that happens is you become disconnected from all that cool shit you learned to say. You can't be resourceful when you're in an interaction with somebody and you're in a state of panic or you feel threatened. That's why all that stuff flows. You memorize some great stuff and it goes right out the window the second you get into an interaction. Managing that response is your first responsibility to yourself. And remember, stress doesn't exist outside of your thinking. There's no such thing as stress. It's what you do to yourself. All right. I know it's kind of self-helpy talk and I don't like necessarily to talk about that, but it is. Stress is your perception of a situation. What you consider stressful, another person can be like, dude, what's the big deal? Okay, so that's how you know it's a perception. Now I'm going to show you this. I don't know how well it's going to go across the room, so I might even have to draw it here. So I call my alpha identity model. All right, it's really simple. It's not really that big a deal, but I want to pass it on to you. It's basically a big circle. Okay, there's three things in the middle. Self-esteem is one. Write that down. Self-esteem and self-confidence. Those two are pointing into self-image. Ultimately, your self-image will determine everything you can do in your life. If you can't see yourself doing it, you're not going to do it. If Arnold Schwarzenegger didn't see himself as a very political individual and didn't care that other people thought it was funny that he was an action hero and now he's a governor of our state, he would never have done it, right? There's nothing he did in his life that he didn't imagine himself doing at first. So self-image is critical to your inner game. Now outside the circle out here, those are beliefs. You can't see it there because it's really, really small, but it's beliefs. Beliefs are those little patrol things on the outside of your definition of yourself. Now, are beliefs true or false? It's kind of a trick question. Are beliefs true or false? They're both. Here's the thing to remember. It's the important thing to remember. Beliefs are not facts, even though we treat them as if they are. Beliefs would be called facts if they were. All right, really important. It's a kind of a no-brainer, but at the same time, it's tough for us to let go of our beliefs, especially beliefs about women. I'm going to give you a great technique, and it's actually derived from something that's established, very well established, but I found it to be the most effective way of getting you to feel better about yourself in that kind of new agey way. But this is important. How many of you have heard of the Sedona method? Raise your hands. The Sedona method, like Sedona, Arizona. It is Arizona, isn't it? It's basically the art of letting shit go. That's what it is. It's the art of letting shit go. You have to learn how to let bad stuff go faster. When something bad happens to you, how quickly can you let that experience go? How long are you clinging to it and holding on to it and replaying it in your memory VCR? And the other part, and this is the part that's tough. It was so tough for me when I heard this. I'm like, no, I can't do that. Let good stuff go too. Do you know why? Can you imagine why that would get in your way? Yeah, you can get stuck in moments. It's good for reinforcing your self-image when you need that boost or you have a ritual that you go through to get yourself feeling good about yourself. But ultimately, good stuff gets in your way of experiencing new good stuff. Okay? So think about that. It's really important. Letting go of experience and letting it become just a memory that doesn't influence your current moment is it's an art unto itself, but it's really important. And the Sedona method does it like this. And I can summarize the whole thing for you right now. This is so cool because it is. It's super simple. Just ask yourself one question about any experience and get in the habit of asking yourself this at every time. Can I let this go? If you can't, why not? Can I let this go? If I can't let it go, why not? Why can't I let it go? And if I can't let it go, how soon will I let it go? Because it's okay. Some shit, you're just going to be like, man, I got to get pissed about this for a little while. I'm sorry, I'm going to go over here and I'm going to be fucking steamed for a while about this. And that's okay. But you better have an end date, an expiration date on that event and that experience. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
The faster you ask yourself that question, the better you're going to actually get at doing it. Trust me, this is something I'm still working on, but you know what? It was one of the big revelations I had was just, I'm holding on to too much shit. I gotta let it go. Let it go, let it go, let it go. You can even make that a mantra. I believe in mantras just as much as intelligent affirmations. I have to put it in that phrasing because I don't believe that affirmations you get from other people work all that great. A mantra is something you can say that just like blocks out other things you're thinking, and because you're focusing on it and it's like wiping stuff out. It's like when you're doing the om, when you're meditating, that's just helping you get rid of all the other shit in your head. So I use let it go, let it go, let it go. Just let it go, let it go, let it go. Stop, let it go, let it go. And I can, like, it's like a blast in my head. I just see this burst of light and it's like, no, don't think, let it go. Okay. These are little thought experiments. These are little thought tricks. Mind tricks are okay if they make you feel better about yourself and they get the effect you want, right? There is no spoon. You guys heard that, right? What's it from?
Matrix.
The Matrix. That's another movie that you can never get away from talking about when you're doing pickup talks is The Matrix and The Fight Club. You can't just not talk about those two. And that's it's part of the reason I named my company Morpheus Productions. Morpheus was the god of sleep, right? He's the one that was also in charge of waking you up, and that's what I like to think I can help guys do. Most guys focus a lot of attention on inner game as if it were tangible. Like, I can work on my inner game. Inner game, write this down, really important. Inner game is a cycle, not a state. Inner game is a cycle, not a state. It's a pattern you get into with yourself that creates strong confidence, happy attitude, positive juju vibe, whatever you want to call it, right? Okay? So if you think about it in that way, you'll have a healthier way of implementing it. And I'm going to get back into that again too because this is important. I'll have exercises that you guys are going to do. We create feedback loops with other people. I talked about this previously. When you interact with a person, you create a feedback loop with them. When I was talking to you earlier, I was a slightly different person because I was responding to how you talked to me and what you were saying to me and the way you communicate. I had to adjust my communication a little bit. We all do this. We do this with women especially. So your inner game depends on your outer game and vice versa. That's a feedback loop unto itself. Here's a technique. And this is a mental technique. Just something to remember. This is a lot of what inner game can come down to sometimes. I was talking to some other guys about this. That sometimes it's just about me saying something up here that you'll be like, oh, and then a bunch of other things go click, 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 clack. And they'll like mesh up all of a sudden. Okay, so that's what it's about. Entertaining these notions and getting some revelations in them. Somebody once said this to me, and I thought it was kind of like the most negative thing I had heard at the time, but it was actually kind of true. I also made the mistake of saying it to a woman, and she wasn't too happy with me. You show me the hottest woman in the world, and I'll show you a guy who's tired of fucking her. There's an edge to that that's really cynical, right, guys? It's pretty dark. But it is true. It is true, because everybody, eventually, the looks aren't going to matter. I'm going to tell you right now. I have a very attractive girlfriend, very attractive. She gets picked up on all the time. She's Asian, so of course she does. But honestly, I knew that at some point that was going to run out, and I would have to fall back on who she was as a person. And she's a wonderful person. She's a saint. So if that's true, do yourself a favor. Start getting picky now. Being picky and being, John will talk about this, qualification of women is essential, because it puts you in the driver's seat where you probably don't feel like it right now. I hesitate to say that most guys in here feel like they're being steered around more by women than the other way around. That's part of why we're here, in a way. It is what it is. Here's a technique for you. When you meet a woman, let me see a show of hands again. How many of you guys were interested in a possible girlfriend if you met a cool chick? Raise your hand. Good. Okay. Just want to make sure that was still true. especially when you meet a really good woman, don't you get that, like, that supercharge of, ooh, this could be it. This could be, right? You start to get that little bit of, you start to entertain notions, you start to play things in your head, you start to future project. Women do this great. It's called crystallizing. We're creating a new reality that doesn't exist yet, and it's dangerous. Be careful about that. But when you meet a woman and things start to move forward and get cool, reality check yourself back down right away. I'm not saying disappoint yourself. I'm saying reality check yourself back down. Write down on a piece of paper the pros and cons of that woman. Because you'll see some up front that you may not recognize later on, because you don't want to, because you're getting some. It happens, right? Sex blindness. I'm getting pussy, so I can't see that she is a bitch sometimes. You'll see these things, and they're red flags, and later on, they could be very well be the downfall. But recognizing them, and it keeps you in perspective. It makes you go, instead of, yeah. Every woman, this is another thing to write down. Write this down. Every woman is a maybe or a no. Every woman is a maybe or a no. Never a yes when you first meet her. Do you understand that? Does that make sense? Every woman is either, she could be one I could hang with, or she's, nuh-uh, no way, sorry, I'll just, you know, hang out with her a few minutes, but I'm gone. She is never a, yes, she's it, she's the one, she's totally it, I'm gonna call my mom, I'm getting ready. This is so cool! Because we've done that, I've done it, I know you've done it. We've all kind of gone off on that bandwagon a little bit, right? She's either a no, or maybe she's never a yes. Keep these things in perspective, right? It's all up here. Run her against your qualifications list. How many of you guys have a qualification list for what you will want in a woman? Raise your hand. Raise it up high. Okay, for you guys that don't, that's part of your homework. Get a list of specific criteria that you are looking for, even in your, like, if you guys aren't looking for a relationship. The kind of woman, like John was talking about, that you're compatible with and you like, because you're going to connect faster with women because you are being real. I mean, that was the real essence of what he was saying, was that the reason you get so much more success with women is because you're being real to yourself. And that becomes a sense of congruence and integrity that you can take in everything. And that's what I stand for. Three questions. This is the coolest, well, all right, you may not think it's cool up front, but this is what is essentially going on in your life, and you must have these three questions mastered. It's called the three questions. From you, Tony Robbins freaks, you'll recognize this. I really like and admire a lot of the stuff he does. The three questions are, number one, write this down, this is really important. Number one is, what do I focus on? When something happens to you, what do I focus on? Number two, what does that mean to me? Number three is, what am I going to do about it? Those are the only three questions you ever need to ask yourself about any situation, and keep things in perspective and manage your emotions, your inner game, all that stuff, okay? Especially applicable with women. I talk about these things very generally because I know they work everywhere outside of your life with women, and that's really what makes it work and stick, because anything you do regularly will become part of you. Slides keep changing. These three questions will define your reality and your success in life. They really will. Your ability to master just those three questions, because most people have programmed all three of those on autopilot. Think about I remember early on in the game for me, when I was just trying to get a grasp on this, was what was I focusing on was happening instantly. I was focusing on the rejection, the things that went wrong. I'm just by nature, I was used to being criticized as a kid, critical growing up. I'm critical now because I'm a martial arts instructor, so that's like a whole other thing. For you martial artists, there's a great joke. How many black belts does it take to screw in a light bulb? 5. 1 to screw in the light bulb and 4 to tell him he's doing it wrong. If you're in martial arts, you get that even more. What did it mean to me? I was on autopilot for that. It meant I was a bad guy. I shouldn't be doing this. I'm manipulating women, right? That's the thing, is the bad part of this is it's a social stigma for guys to learn how to attract women. Immediately it comes across as we are manipulating women. It's uncool. It's like we're raping women, honestly. It's a harsh word to use, but it's like we're somehow being a horrible creature on this planet if we're learning this stuff. I'm putting it to extremes, but that's the way it can be perceived. Basics of emotional self-control. Here you go. There's 3 parts of your thinking you need to get to be aware of. There are moods, there are emotions, and there are thoughts. There are moods, there are emotions, and there are thoughts. And here's the difference, and here's how you have to think about it. A mood sets the stage. A mood, it's tough to control. You can influence your mood, but sometimes you just wake up in a shitty mood, right? You can't help that. And you shouldn't have to feel like, oh, I should be able to just snap out of this mood. We beat ourselves up over that. Don't. Moods can sometimes, they're like the weather. You can't always control them. You can influence it, but... Now, moods do what? They will now color all of your thinking while you're in that mood. Well, I'm in a bad mood. Women, they're such bitches, man. If they would just be nice to me, it's their fault. Now, what does that thought do? That thought creates an emotion. You can't have an emotion without a thought that goes in front of it. You create these emotions by thinking certain things. You see how this works? It's a daisy chain of events that happens all the time, and we just don't think about it. We just let it happen. So you have a bad mood. Then you have a thought that runs in your head because you just approached this woman and she reacted to you not as positively as you would have liked. So now you don't have a phone number. You wasted 10 minutes of talking to her. Okay, I'm painting a bad experience, but that's what it seems like. Your emotion makes you, now you're in a pissed mood. Now you're even more pissed off, you know, and your emotions get negative. And then the other side of it, that's a downward spiral. The upward spiral is something, you're in a good mood. Doesn't matter what you did, right? You're still in a good mood. You're even in a better mood, and you find a reason why. How is it that the exact same thing can happen to you and you can feel different about it? That's the essence of how emotional self-control works. Moods are the X factor. You can't always control them. They're like the weather. But what you're focusing on will create your emotions. You can recreate emotional states at will. Have you guys ever tried to do that? Raise your hand if you've ever tried to recreate an emotional state. Okay, we've all tried to do it. You do it all the time when you just remember things, right? The problem is that most people never take the controls. We are so immersed in our own thinking that we don't recognize that we are thinking. We are the ones that are thinking. Your thinking isn't just being pushed upon you. You're the ones doing it. That's what meditation helps you realize and separate from. I'm going to give you some strategies for this. I want to get past like just theoretical stuff and get you the good stuff, but this is important. Negativity. This is a big downer in guys' game. Negativity in any of its facets. This is how you define negativity. Negativity equals subconscious gangrene. Pickup gangrene. Think of it that way. Right? Can you relate to that? Yeah? See the pain. It's basically, I want you to see the pain of a life that's lived under the yoke of pessimism and cynicism. Like I said, I am still a bit negative at times. I know it. I recognize it. But I have a part of me that has definitely broken free of that. And I can like vent all this negative stuff and I'll stop and go, but you know what? I love people. They're just cool. They suck, but they're cool. You know? You got to get to that point. You got to work through it so you can like vent that stuff and let it out and then get to your realization that you want to have. I basically say I've negotiated myself into a position of pleasant cynicism. If that does anything for you. Have you guys ever seen this? What is that? Yin yang. The yin yang symbol. It's very deeply meaningful to me, and it's probably kind of a cliche in a lot of ways, especially when you see Asian stuff and Asian culture. I am exposed to a lot of it, but it's a very important symbol. Go back here for a second. It basically symbolizes both. In pickup, it's important because it symbolizes the masculine and the feminine, right? The masculine and the feminine, and the little bit in each one of us that we have of the other, all right? I'm saying that right now, if you were to like to draw this today, unfortunately, if the black is the male, that it's all fuzzy on the borders, and that white dot is like a bigger, fuzzier dot. A big, ugly, fuzzy dot, because we've lost a lot of that perspective on what it is to be men these days. We don't have Again, we're going back to Fight Club here. We don't have those trials. We don't have those things that we had to go through a long time ago. Like my grandfather telling me stories about, he's sitting in his camp in World War II and a tank comes over the ridge right at him. Can you imagine that experience? Shit. And women. Women, now that, I mean, believe me, all the equality they have is absolutely, totally justified. But acting the same as men? No, that's not necessary. And that's the part where their dot has gotten fuzzy. So we become too much like the other gender. But inner and outer game are the exact same thing. They intertwine like this. When you put them together, you've got what they call natural game. You guys heard of natural game? It's kind of like the holy grail of what we're doing, right? Everybody wants to be a natural game guy. We want to be just ourselves and be effective at it. And the key to that is integrating these two. It's what I call attracting the women you really want with the real you. The real you, not the fake pickup guy. And it's our thought processes. Inner game, if you want to define it like this, I just think of it as the processes that either enable or disable you from taking the actions you want with women. Okay? Martial arts connection. There is a martial arts connection here. And I liked it because when I first got into this as being a vocation, I was also an instructor and did the two at the same time. And I saw there's so much in common between martial arts and what we do as men trying to attract women. In the martial arts, you learn how to block and you defend and you keep a very strong, safe perimeter around you. Okay, you learn how to block first, which is just as damaging for you, unfortunately, as getting hit sometimes, but less so because at least you can steer it. And that, in a lot of ways, is like when you're first learning to pick up and you learn how to be really strong with your boundaries of flaking and things like that, and you start to set up these really rigid boundaries. Then you learn in martial arts that you can deflect. That when somebody punches, you can sidestep it, and you can parry, and you can deflect the energy and not hurt yourself. And that's what we do when we can effectively banter. All right. So there's a certain amount of this foundation that I found as a parallel, but the important thing to understand here is it's all about handling energy. And not to sound woo-woo about it, because energy often comes across that way. It's the difference in how you handle that woman's energy. How much you give to her, when she maybe snips back at you, what do you do with that? Do you block, or do you just go, whoa, what was that? Feeling a little bit aggro, your time of the month, you know. The way you handle that energy is much more important. Most guys go into an approach with a woman thinking of only one thing. Get. What do I get from this? What can I get? Can I get a phone number? Can I get her interested in me? Can I get attraction? Can I get laid? You've got to go in with the flip side of that. You've got to go in with a give mentality. It's what they call approach with the giving hand instead of the taking hand. If you turn that one thing around in your approaches, guys, it will totally make the difference in meeting women. Is coming into an interaction with women, giving, having something to give right off the bat, being the giver. And by giving, do you think I mean give her drinks?
No.
That's the pattern, male pattern provider syndrome. I show that I can provide, have a drink on me. No, you gotta come in with positive energy, being upbeat, giving energy instead of taking energy, giving compliments. Compliments are good. If done correctly, they are absolutely a great way to open a conversation with a woman. They just have to be done more intelligently. I tell guys, don't compliment her on her looks, on the physical parts of her that are given to her. Genetic? No, only on her choices. Compliment her on her choices. What she's wearing is a choice. How she did her hair is a choice. All that stuff is a choice, all right? That's much more flattering to a woman because it shows, oh, I am on the ball. I do know what I'm doing. I'm okay. That kind of affirmation is 10 times more impressive because every other guy, like we know, is complimenting her on her looks because they're not thinking about it. Thinking. And the last thing is nice guy-itis. That's a big inner game roadblock. When we're talking about nice guy versus bad boy, bad boy versus nice guy is really important. I did a whole product about this. Actually, I've done two products about it because there's two parts of this problem. Number one is recognizing and affirming who we are as men and being men, alpha masculinity. It's the program that I created. And the other side of that is the bad boy formula, which is showing how those guys use that energy of being a little edgier version of a man to get women, okay? Most nice guys are just simply trying to avoid risk. In most situations, they're trying to avoid risk. And the classical definition of a nice guy, you know what he's really doing? He's trying to get. He's manipulative, and she knows this. He's not being nice to be nice. He's being nice to get something. That's what she sees in nice guys that pisses her off. It's not that you're not a cool. If you're a cool guy, that's one thing. If you think of yourself as a nice guy, it's really meaning you're a cool guy. But look at your behaviors and how much of it is geared around getting that result from a woman. That's what she sees as the manipulative nice guy. So there's a difference between trying to be that rude guy or the jerk that can't take a hint and that player that wants sex. Okay, there's a big difference from those guys. Scarcity and abundance. Here's the big thing. How many of you guys have heard this whole concept of scarcity and abundance thinking? Raise your hand. Most of us have, right? And it's a tough one for us to grasp onto because here's why. I'll just tell you why. Scarcity and abundance is programmed into you. Human beings live in a scarce world. We've always been geared towards scarcity. We perceive everything as being a limited resource. Women, food, all of that. It's just the way we've been wired because that was what helped us survive. Because here's the other part of it. When you have abundance, it takes care of itself. You don't need a strategy to handle abundance. You need a strategy to get yourself out of scarcity. Do you understand that?
Yeah.
Okay. So scarcity is automatic. Don't try and necessarily fight this. And abundancy really means you're relaxed, right? You're taken care of. When you're approaching a woman and you feel abundance, like I've got like five other phone numbers. This is just I'm padding the night out here. I only got another hour. I figured I'd just talk to some women. You ever done that, by the way? You kind of met your goals and then you become like super relaxed for the rest of the night because you feel like, oh, I got my approaches in, right? What is that? It's artificially, you created a sense of abundance. It's a mind trick. This is how it works, guys. That's what you do is you create these little games. So scarcity is anxious. Scarcity is that anxious guy, the peckish one, the one that's needy, right? Don't fight yourself. This is a good technique. What I like is an inner game technique you can really use. Most guys can't get traction in their inner game because they're trying to change. They're trying to have more confidence. They're working at it. Don't try to stop doing things. And a lot of this active energy we do, it's like Aikido. You know what Aikido is? It's a martial art based on using your opponent's energy against him. He comes at you with a punch, you sidestep and throw him into the wall. Steven Seagal, this is his martial art. Despite him becoming fat, he's still really, really good at it. And you should see that, and you see it in a lot of the old movies. He just takes guys and just tosses them. He waits, sees his opportunity and throws them. Aikido is working with energy, never against it. You should probably write that down too. Work with energy, never against it. Most guys are fighting their own natural ways, fighting who they are, as opposed to working with that energy. This is why working to improve your weaknesses is often not a very good thing to do. And I know it's going to sound like a bit of a conundrum, and I'll explain that a little bit more later on. But working on your weaknesses too much can lower your self-esteem radically. Working to improve what you're already good at, much better, which is why when guys use passion in their approaches, they become 10 times better. You see that connection? So you can have quantum leaps. What I do, this is what I call the close the door technique or the next chapter technique. In your life right now, if you want to close the door on old habits and bad habits and kind of bad patterns you've been engaged in the past, I use phrases that help me just kind of like close the door on that particular thing. Like I'll say something like, that was the old me. That was the old me. I don't do that anymore. Or that was the other fella. That was actually used really well in a James Bond movie. If you guys are James Bond freaks, you'll relate to this. I'm a total James Bond nut. Honor Majesty's Secret Service was the first movie that didn't have Sean Connery. And they opened the movie with this fight sequence. And George Lazenby's line at the end of that whole thing, because you don't see him until the very end. He's like gets beat up and everything. And the woman takes off. He looks up at the camera and he goes, this never happened to the other fella. And it was a great line. I thought it was pretty good. It was like self-deprecating about the whole, oh, we don't have Sean Connery anymore. And I thought he did a good job. I used that line. That was the other fella. That wasn't me. I'm the same guy, but that was the other guy. He's the past version. That was version 1.0. Think of yourself in terms of chapters, too. I like cutting off like parts of my life into chapters so I can deal with them more effectively. Because otherwise they bleed over. They have this continuity that makes you feel kind of like, I could still be that dude, man. Cut it off. Put a line in the sand between those versions of yourself. So here's an epiphany. Oh, wait a minute, change. Here's a big one. We're talking about change, right? And why people don't change? Why don't people change? It's kind of rhetorical. Even though we want the pleasure of what that change will bring us, there's risk in acting, right? So of course, we're homeostasis, we tend to not change. There's a form of pleasure, comfort, in not acting, in not doing anything. Because not doing anything leaves us in comfort, right? Doesn't change. There's a possibility of pain in doing something. So change is always a threat to us. And you have to reverse this perception. What you have to learn how to do, and this is a technique, we'll go through this as a kind of a mental exercise. Actually, we'll do it right now. Reversing this perception means you have to learn how to imagine yourself into eventual pain. I'm gonna come up with a great situation for you guys. Put your pens down for a second. I want you to put your hands in your lap. I want you to close your eyes for a second. Just listen to my voice. Don't worry, I won't hypnotize you and you won't wake up doing monkey dancing or anything. We're gonna just think about something right here. I want you to think about an approach. Okay, you're in a bar. And you see a very attractive woman. She actually looks kind of positive and friendly. And you want to go over and talk to her. And as has happened to every other guy out there, and you feel this very, very deep in your core of your gut, you want to walk over, but you just can't. You're just like, oh man, I know I could just say hi. I kind of know what I could say. I could open with an opener. I want to. You get up, you start moving towards her, but then that feeling in your stomach stops you, and you get pissed. And you walk away, you walk back over, you tell yourself, oh, maybe I can go back. I'll go back and do it later. And never happens. The whole night goes by. You never talk to that woman. She walks away. She leaves the bar with her friends. Okay, now keep your eyes closed. Now I want you to imagine yourself, you're at home. You're at home later that night. Now you're kicking yourself. We've all done this. We've all been kicking ourselves over that one we didn't approach. Feel that, man. You're pissed at yourself. Damn it. Damn it, man. The fuck? Why didn't I do that? God, this sucks. Shit. I could have her phone number, man. I could have had her phone number. Even rejection would have been okay if I at least tried. God damn it. Feel it, man. You're pissed. Shit. Okay, now open your eyes. Do you feel more motivated now, like you could have gone back and gotten that number now?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah? Okay, this is how you pre-imagine the pain you know is going to be happening. You could have done this in the bar. When you were sitting there trying to work up your courage, you could be like, oh, fuck, I know what it feels like. Later on, I'm going to be kicking myself. I'm going to be like, damn, fuck, doing it. So future imagining that pain is really important because it'll motivate you now as opposed to waiting until you get home and get pissed at yourself later. Okay, so there's a constructive way of using some of the natural male energy. Plus, you'll be more energized. Now you're like, ooh, you got a little bit more energy to you, a little more pep, a little bit more, you'll have more tonality, you'll have better body language because you'll have come in, don't come in aggressive, but you'll come in more assertive. See how this works? The other side of this, by the way, to complete the picture, and I'll repeat this later on, to complete your full motivational picture, you need two things. One is pain pushing you from behind, like, oh, I don't want that. Stop hitting me. And the other is the carrot in front of us, right? The carrot we're chasing. So then you also imagine, okay, wait a minute. You imagine a good scenario. You imagine a great scenario of approaching. Let's do that now. Close your eyes, put your pen down for a second, put your hands in your lap, and just breathe deep in your stomach. Actually, when you breathe, imagine your back expanding. That helps you really breathe deeply. Now you're seeing the same situation. You're in the bar. You walk up to that blonde. She's got one of those cute little perky elf noses, you know? You walk up and you know she smiles at you. The second you walk up, she's already smiling at you. And you say, hey, you know what? I just knew I would be kicking myself. I'd go over and say, hi, my name's... And she puts her hand on your arm right away. And you're like, oh, cool. This is very cool. And she starts talking. She's like, oh my God, that's so cool you came by. Yeah, we were just talking about... And she starts talking to you. She starts telling you what to talk about. She starts talking about the wine. It's great wine at this bar. And you're like, great. And you're talking, and things are going great. And you're about to leave, and you start to turn back, and you're like, you know what? Okay, we're both having so much of a good time here. We gotta connect again in the future. What's your phone number? She's like, oh, yeah. She grabs her purse, just dives in, grabs her phone out. Here, let me give you a phone number. And you can see it on her phone. She's like, give me your number too. You key it in. and you walk away. Now open your eyes. That's the carrot, right? That's the positive thing we want to have happen. That's like a perfect approach, right? It's practically, it's like they laid out the carpet for you and you just walked it. I approached and it happened. Right? That's the kind of thing you want to mentally imagine happening. I had this one guy I had to coach on this for a while. It was so funny. I said, dude, here's what you need to do. I talked about that experiment. He's like, yeah, but whenever I do that, she always like turns me down. I'm like, your own fantasy and she's turning you down? Yeah, we had a lot of work to do. All right, so there is a complete emotional picture. Create pain that pushes you forward and something pleasurable that you have as a positive goal. When you have those two things in place, you have that moving conveyor walkway like in the airports I was talking about that gets you, that doubles your speed and moves you forward towards your goal. That's the simplest model of motivation there really is. Now, the toughest part of that work is that you've got to create that for yourself. There's a saying that, and I want to tell you about, I want to give you a couple of sayings here that really impress upon you how important this is. Thinking is the critical distance, the critical difference. The lazier you are about thinking, the harder your life is going to be. Quite honestly, that's what we're here about. You guys have got to engage your brains a little bit. The more things are going to catch you unprepared, the less likely you are to think. Now let me expand about that a little bit because it's important. Thinking is hard work. Maybe that's why so few people do it. That was Thomas Edison who said that. He went even further. He said, there's no expedient to which a man will go to avoid the real labor of thinking. It's true. Seriously, have you ever talked to some guys and they're like, you know, are you serious? Can you just not think through that? It becomes an automatic reaction too. This is something that women spot, by the way, is how inclined you are. My dad taught this to me early on. I'm so thankful for it. My dad could be an SOB, but this is one thing I'm totally grateful for. He taught me that I need to think for myself, and I need to think through things. And the first response was always, what do you think? He made me think my way through situations. It's so vital. William James once wrote, a great many people think they are thinking when they are merely rearranging their prejudices. Just because there's activity going on in our minds doesn't mean we're actually thinking. A great many people think they are thinking when they're merely rearranging their prejudices. Bob Proctor, in his book, You Were Born Rich, he writes, what passes for thinking for most people is really just the faculty of memory, playing old movies and rehashing past events. Okay, so what is real thinking? I don't want to get too off the path here a little bit, but real thinking is creatively finding solutions to your problems like I just gave you right there. I gave you the method. You're the only one who can put that into place, right? I already talked to you about that. Let me explain just a little bit more, though, why that leverage thing works. That's called leverage, by the way. Using emotional pain and pleasure to make you do something is called leverage because they have the highest amount of influence. It's like having a lever. I can move a big weight. If I have a big enough lever, I can move the world, right? Archimedes. Leverage pain. You imagine future pain of not doing something or present pain if it's present pain. And even imagine past pain. Use past experiences to motivate you. You can probably vividly imagine some approaches that you did that really sucked, right? You can probably recall them. I don't recommend you live there. But if you want to use that for motivation, use that. Add in the promise of pleasure and you have a full motivational picture. You only have a small amount of activity to bulldog your way through stuff, guys. You don't have enough energy to just do like, I think John does. I think I did at a certain point because we had a lot of mental stress about getting a certain way in life. I'm not saying you don't, but I don't think most guys do. I know it came for me from the way I was brought up. I just had a lot of mental stress I had to work out, so I bulldog things, which means I grab onto it and I'm like, and I'll get it done. I'll do it somehow. I don't care how much pain it is, but most of us can't work that way. And honestly, it's not healthy. So you only have a finite amount of energy to make things happen. All right, can we agree on that? Have you ever found yourself just like totally exhausted from the smallest things sometimes? Just walking up and talking to a woman could be so physically fucking exhausting. I've come out of conversations so I'm like, oh God, that was so much. I need to sleep. I need a nap and a juice box. You got to create what are known as micro habits. You use what limited amount of energy you have to create micro habits. A micro habit is simply using all of your available energy to do one small thing and make it a part of your life and that you won't forget and you won't let it go, okay? For example, I'll do something simple. Let's put it at a very basic level. You're really, really approach anxious. It's tough for you to walk up and talk to women. So you're doing just walking up and getting close to women or making eye contact on the street. That's it. That's it. You focus on that for 21 days, because they say that's how long it needs to take as a habit. And so you focus for 21 days, you bulldog your way through that 21 days to establish the habit of at least smiling and making eye contact with women on the street or walking up closer to the women that you want to approach. That's it. That's it. Okay? Now you've got that as a habit. Now it's not energy for you. It's not more, you just do it because it's a lot easier now. Does that make sense? Yes? Have you ever tried to do that? That's what a micro habit is. You use what little energy you have to create those little habits that get you past your immediate little hurdle of activity or whatever it is you can't do. Now you can recharge and you can attack the next one and the next one. But if you're constantly assaulting yourself with this need to go, I got to get myself all the way through this thing and doing it over and over and over again, and it's not habitual or it's not made a part of your identity, because that's what it'll do. After 21 days, it'll be pretty much a part of you. It'll be your lifestyle. It'll be who you are, because you are an approacher. You don't approach. You are an approacher. Do you understand the difference?
Yeah?
Yeah. You sure? Okay, it's important. It's an identity thing. If you're not an approacher, if that's not who you see yourself, remember self-image? If you don't see yourself as being an approacher, it ain't gonna happen. We can talk about this shit all day long and you're just gonna be like, oh, and it won't happen for you. All right, so micro habits. Let's do another exercise. This one's really good too. This goes kind of along the lines of the one I just did, but this is a good one. I do this as a daily meditation because it's more generally applicable than the approach one. Put your pens down for a second. Sit back in your chair, lay your hands in your lap, breathe deep from your stomach, let it expand your back, let it out slowly through your nose. Okay, I want you to imagine yourself, you're 90 years old, sitting in the old folks' home. You're sitting in a chair, you got your walker with the cool green tennis balls on it right next to you. TV's blaring 25 decibels above what it needs to be. Nurses are checking in on you, and you're like, God, this sucks. But you're thinking back on all those times that you didn't act, the times you could have done something, right? You could have gone, you could have approached that woman, you could have gone for that job that was cool, that was more like what you wanted to do, but you were safe, you were cool where you were at, and you could have gotten a promotion, so you stayed there. So you retired from there, but you're wondering, what could I have done? Man, I wish I'd gone to Australia. Shit, I wish I'd done that. I'm 90 years old. The only way I'm going there now is in a box. Okay, now you've got no time. You realize that you had nothing to lose. You're still in this nursing home. Nothing's really changed. Those events could have happened to you and you'd still be here, but you'd be a happy man knowing that you lived your life completely, fully. Okay, now open your eyes. You have this capability every day. Imagine yourself in that nursing home. Imagine yourself looking back on a life half lived, 25% lived. Now you've got that time back. I call this the Scrooge exercise. You know what I mean? You know what I mean by Scrooge, right? He's got those three nights. He thinks it took three nights and he missed Christmas and he missed his opportunity to go back and make things right. And then he wakes up and realizes he didn't. That was all done in one night and now he's got his chance. Is that motivating? Sure, shit it is if you can do that. And that's what you can do right now. You can pre-live that experience. Is that helpful?
Yeah.
Okay, so start your day ritual. I'll give you my example. I'll tell you some essential parts of it. Number one is breathing, learning how to breathe. That probably relaxed a lot of you guys too. I can see some of you guys are like a little bit more chilled now. Breathing is important. You can use a Qigong exercise like that to help you with breathing or just do it on your own, meditative breathing, okay? Water. Drink a lot of water in the morning first thing. You wake up dehydrated, so you have to take in water immediately. Most people don't do that. Third thing, meditate. Meditation is not necessarily some spiritual woo-woo thing. Meditation is very simple. It's consciously taking control of your thinking. That's it. That's all it is. It's not like having to transcend your body. It's consciously taking control of your own thinking. So you can be meditating in the middle of an approach. And I find myself in that state sometimes. I'll find myself, wait a minute, oh, I'm starting to think about what I'm going to say next. Stop that. And that's a meditation right there. Exercise. That one's kind of an iffy one. I don't like to exercise first thing in the morning when I wake up because it's the worst time of the day for me for some reason. Just my joints aren't there yet. But very close to that. I do it like late morning, early afternoon. Exercising to get yourself going. Those are vital things to get in there. Another thing I add in, just tossing stuff out here for you guys, vitamins. just the dietary thing. Take vitamin B, get your energy going. Good breakfast, whatever it is you eat in the morning. I eat oatmeal. It's just raw energy. Nothing complicated about it, and I don't get sick of it. For some reason, I just don't. I eat it every day, and I never get sick of it. And I feel great.
But this is basically the secret to success with women, which is qualification. All right, so qualification has a near and dear place in my heart because when I took my boot camp years and years and years and years and years ago, this is really what fixed my game. So qualification exists for a couple of different varieties, but first we want to define it. So qualification happens anytime someone tries to positively affect how someone else sees them. So, for example, if I'm talking to a girl and say, I really like girls who cook. Do you cook? And she says yes, she's qualifying herself. She's trying to positively affect her, my image of her. If a girl starts name dropping or bragging or, you know, trying to impress you in any way, she's qualifying herself. And women only qualify themselves to people they're attracted to. Qualification is the second major test for attraction. Women just will not qualify themselves if they're not attractive. So, we want to be aware of this so that we can know that we have it and move past. You don't want to waste time trying to attract girls who are already trying to qualify themselves. So why is qualification important? Three major reasons. Number one, it gives women a reason that you like them other than their looks. When girls go out, they meet a lot of guys. They meet a lot of guys they're attracted to. They meet a lot of guys they give their phone numbers to. Sorry to burst your bubble, but on average, a girl gives out her phone number 3 to 4 times every time she goes to a nightclub. You're not special when you get a phone number. So what happens then is when you call these girls, if they remember you, if they weren't, and you're like, oh, hey, you know, it's John. You want to hang out? She's thinking, why did this guy like me? All I know about him, we were kind of attracted to each other. Maybe we made out, but I don't really know why he's calling. He must just want sex. I don't really feel like having sex right now. Oh, I'll call you back. And then the call never comes. So qualification cuts down on your flaking. It also helps with your last minute resistance because it gives a girl a reason that you like her other than her looks. Other than her looks, other than her sexuality, other than the fact that you want to have sex. Second thing the qualification does is it builds investment in the interaction. Investment is kind of the hidden secret to pickup. The more you get a woman to invest emotionally, physically, financially, the more attached she's going to be. You guys, has anyone ever won like a stupid radio prize? Right? I won like a Bare Naked Ladies CD one time and drove like halfway across town to go pick it up, even though I don't even like the Bare Naked Ladies. Why? It's investment. If you win something, if you feel like you're getting something for free, you invest. So the more a woman qualifies herself, the more she's investing in the interaction. The more she jumps through hoops, the more she chases you, the more she proves herself, the more she's investing in the interaction, the less likely she is to flake, the less likely she is to have resistance. And lastly, most important thing, it helps you figure out whether or not you and the girl are actually compatible. It helps you get an idea what kind of girl you're dealing with. So, back in the day, qualification was kind of taught in a very tactical way. It was to make the girl think you like her for something other than her looks, right? It was you just find her any reason that you can compliment her for something other than her looks. And that works. You can get laid with that, but it's not as effective, it's not as good as actually qualifying girls on things you care about, qualifying women on things that are actually important relationship qualities for you. So we'll have an exercise at the end of this presentation on that. All right, so what happens without qualification? Flaking, right? Flaking's a big problem. You know, either the girl doesn't pick up the phone, or, you know, she doesn't return text messages, or she tells you she's gonna show up for a date and she actually stands you up. Various levels of flaking. Last minute resistance, right? When a girl's not sure you actually like her, or she just thinks you're trying to get laid, you have player vibe, you get last minute resistance. Last minute resistance sucks. Lack of investment. When girls aren't invested, you have to go through every phase of sex to get them to have sex with you on the third, fourth, fifth times they're hanging out, like we talked about yesterday. And lastly, sad handles. So when you don't have qualification. I dated this girl, Elizabeth, and I was like, she would just say sad panda, like it was like her verbal tip, and now I've incorporated it in my resolution. All right, tools for qualifying women. Four major tools we're gonna qualify women. Number one is what we call pushbacks. Those are an attraction technique. These are things you can use really early on. We're gonna get into them in more detail in a second, but you can use those in attraction. Qualification never begins and never ends. It's a cyclical process. You're never gonna be done qualifying women. You're never gonna be done giving women reasons you like them. You're never gonna be done complimenting women. It doesn't happen, even in relationships. You've gotta always be qualifying and clarifying in her mind why you like her. So it starts early on, qualification pushbacks. Then we have compliment, cold read, statement of intent, release. We'll get into that. That sounds very complicated, but I'll make it sound less so. Then we have vague hook, real release, rapport. Maybe some of you guys are familiar with that mystery, sort of modified mystery thing. And lastly, Wilkie's, or why I like you statements. So let's get through these now. First, we have pushbacks. Pushbacks get women qualifying themselves early on, usually by using some form of unflattering stereotype. So what I want to do early on to start the qualification process is I want to give her something to push back against. That's why we call these pushbacks, because I'm giving her an image that she doesn't want to live up to. So I might be talking to a girl and say, you know, you seem like a really nice girl, but you know, I feel like you're like a little too nice for me. Or I feel like, you know, we get along really good, but you're like way too prude for me, I can tell. Or, you know, you seem like you're like really shy. You probably don't get out a lot. These are all things that are gonna encourage her to push back. Now, if you say that to a girl and she just agrees, what does that mean? She doesn't like you, she's not attracted to you. If a girl just accepts that, she's not interested, you're in apathy. She doesn't care enough to push back. She doesn't care what you think of her, right? You say something like that to a girl and she just takes it, she doesn't care enough about your opinion. So you're not there yet. Doesn't mean you're not ever gonna be there. Pushbacks are great, you can use them later on too. They're basically just a way to kind of like push a conversation in another direction, right? A lot of times we try to like push things in one direction when in reality it's easier by going the opposite route. Right? If you want a girl to be like wild and sexy, it's much harder to get her to be wild and sexy by telling her she's wild and sexy than it is to tell her she's prude, and then she's gonna want to prove to you that she's not. So we always wanna kind of use things. We want to let women create their own seductions by pushing back against these things, so it seems like it's more of their idea. Does that make sense? Compliment, SOI, release. All right. So now we're gonna talk about compliment. In general, complimenting is a really good technique. The problem is most guys don't know how to compliment women. Most guys give very generic, very boring, very unspecific compliments. And then they just let them hang there. They think that like if they give the girl a compliment that all of a sudden she's gonna like magically become super interested. So instead what we wanna do is we wanna structure our compliments in a way that we don't lose value, right? So what we want to do is we want to use compliments to escalate, and then we want to have a way to release that tension if it gets uncomfortable. So we do this by using a compliment followed by a cold read or a statement of intent followed by a release. So there's a safe way to do this and a non-safe way. The safe way is to take your compliment and then just use a cold read, right? So I might say something like, you know, talking to you, I can tell you're a really down-to-earth girl. You know, it's hard to meet girls like that. Like, I bet you that you're kind of really independent and you make your own decisions. That's like a cold read, right? You take a compliment and you use the cold read to elaborate more on the compliment and shape where you want her to go, right? If we want the girl to be a certain way, we want to tell her that she's already that way. Now with a statement of intent, what you're gonna do is you're gonna escalate the interaction. So I might say, you know, talking to you, you have like a really great sense of humor. And I mean that even though I'm totally hitting on you. And a statement of intent creates sexual tension, right? It creates sexual tension, and you're gonna need to release that tension. Now, when it comes to your statements of intent, there's a couple of things you wanna be aware of. Number one, you wanna keep things in the future tense. There's a major difference between I'm hitting on you right now and I'm going to start hitting on you. I'm hitting on you right now is threatening girls. That might cause her to give you a boyfriend objection. She might go, well, you know, I'm taken. But if you say, if you keep doing that, I'm going to start hitting on you, or you know, I'm going to try to get in your pants, it's a lot less threatening. That distance and objectivity from the future tense makes a really big difference. The other thing is using the word trying to as opposed to going to. Like, guys would be like, I'm going to get in your pants. That's scary. That's called rape. Like, I'm trying to get in your pants is called, I'm trying, and she has the chance to say no. These are little semantical differences that make a big difference in how the reaction to these lines go over. And then you have a release. And a release is a non sequitur tease. Releases are used to pop tension. Anytime we're escalating with a statement of intent, or a compliment, or a sexual innuendo or something, we always want to have a release ready to pop that tension if she gets uncomfortable. It's basically, we call it a release because it's like your release valve for the tension. You make her uncomfortable, and then you take it away with the tease. So, in full form, it would look something like this. Talking to you, I can tell you're really together down there with girls. It's really refreshing to meet someone like you, and I mean that even though I'm totally hitting on you. Too bad you're such a dork. Right? Compliment, cold read, it's really more of a compliment. Compliment, statement of intent, release. Right? That makes sense to everyone? This is how you compliment effectively. You can always use releases to take away your compliments, and you can always use compliments to soften your teases. The understanding this dynamic between complimenting and teasing is a really important part of this. So if you have questions, save them for the Q&A, but if you don't understand that, ask about it, because this is really calibration. You calibrate by using compliments to turn when you use a tease when it goes wrong, and then you use teases when you've made too much of an advance and you have to back off a bit. Alright, bait hook real release report. So bait hook real release was a mystery thing. Basically, we'll go through it and I'll show you where I put the little tweaks here. So a bait is a question or statement elicited to get the girl to give you some information you can qualify her on. So, for example, I might say, you know, what do you want to be when you grow up? Now, that's a question. You can also use statements, right? I use the statement, you know, what's a statement I can come up with? You guys just, we just talked about questions and the statements earlier. What's a statement that you could use that's the same as...
You're from Russia.
Well, that would be for nationality, not for what do you want to be when you grow up. But you're thinking in the right way. Sure, something like that. You seem like you wanted to be a lawyer when you were a kid, right? Statements or questions. You always want to switch up your statements and questions. You don't want to use all questions, you don't want to use all statements, but don't get too neurotic about that. The hook is when she answers. She goes, I want to be a lawyer, or I want to be whatever. The real is where you're going to compliment her on. And the important part of the real is that you're going to compliment why you like that. The reason, the whole part of qualifying and complimenting is being able to explain why you like certain things about her and why you like her as a person. That's the whole point of this phase. So, why do you like the fact that she's a lawyer? Or why do you like the fact that she wants to be a model or whatever? That's your real, and that's where your compliment's gonna come from, right? So I like that. You know, I love adventurous girls because I'm the type of person who wants to go to Vegas on 2 hours' notice. You know, I love lawyers because my sister was a lawyer and I feel like you're always safer around lawyers in case you get into legal trouble. You have to give reasons and explain why you like these things. You can't just say cool, you can't just ask these questions and like think that you're doing this right. You have to give a reason you like this. And then, releases are not always necessary with bait hook real release. With the SOI, with the statement of intent, you always have to release because you're making a sexual escalation. Anytime you're making a sexual escalation, unless the girl's super into it, like if I say, you know, if you keep flirting with me, I'm gonna start hitting on you, and the girl's like, I might like that, then I don't need a release. But other than that, I need to release with my statements of intent. With these, you only need to release if you can see the girl's getting uncomfortable. So if I'm like, you know, it seems like you're really down to earth and it's nice to meet someone like that, and she's like, oh my god, you are too, I'm so glad that I met you too, I don't need a release. And me putting a release in there is just me fucking up. It's just me insulting a girl for no reason, right? This is where calibration and social intuition come in. So be aware of, is she accepting the compliment, or is she kind of half-assing taking it? Is she like, oh, okay, thanks. Then you obviously need to use a release. But if she's accepting everything, we want to escalate as much as she allows us. What happens is, verbally, physically, logistically, at some point we're going to hit a point where she's not comfortable with escalation. That's where we need to release and move backwards. Because when she gets uncomfortable, we want to move back so that she gets more uncomfortable with the lack of any escalation than she does with the escalation she was uncomfortable with. Does that make sense? Right? Physically, verbally, we're always going right to her comfort threshold and then pulling back. Right? We want to go right to where she's about to get uncomfortable and then pull back. all the time, because you're progressively getting her more and more comfortable in these situations. Girls are not going to be comfortable with you hitting on them or telling them you want to get in their pants right away. They're not going to be comfortable with you complimenting them right away. That's why you have to be socially aware enough to look at their reaction. Look at her facial expressions. Does she have a facial flinch when you give her a compliment? Does she look like she's not into it? Is she looking around? Is her body language facing you? Is she, you know, really into it? What does she say verbally? Those are how you know whether or not you need to release. But you definitely don't always need a release. What you do always need is a rapport question. This was the fundamental problem with bait, hook, reel release. Is you would get guys who would be like, so are you adventurous? Awesome. Are you spontaneous? Cool. What do you want to be when you grow up? Cool. And it would just sound like a job interview. Rapport questions are important because they demonstrate some genuine interest in what you're qualifying about. If you're acting like you're super excited that she's German or in law school, you want to ask a follow-up question that shows some actual interest in the subject. So if, you know, we're talking about what she wants to be when she grows up, and it's, you know, she wants to be a lawyer, I might say, you know, when did you know you wanted to be a lawyer? Or what kind of lawyer do you want to be? I'm going to ask a follow-up question to show some general interest before I go into another qualifier, right? And you don't want to stack any of these back to back to back. You want to mix these in with normal conversation. We're always going to alternate rapport conversation, just basic getting to know you conversation with qualification. It's going to alternate. You never want to just have qualifiers, 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 because that's weird in job interview. Cool? All right, why I like you statements. Wilkies are great because they give a girl a really solid understanding of why you like her. Wilkies can be the difference between getting laid and not getting laid. So with a Wilkie, what you basically want to do is give her something you like about her. This is one of my favorite ones that I use. You can copy this. It's a word-for-word routine that I use all the time, but you don't need to be this complex. So what I'll usually do is I'll go, look, there are three things I like about you. And I'll make the first one physical. Like, I'll be like, I like the way you smile when you really think something's funny. Then I'll make the second one personality-based. Or, you know, I like the way you have, like, a weird sense of humor like me. And then I'll be like, and the third one, I'm not going to tell you, because if I do, then you're going to stop doing it. Right? Again, just an open loop, just to keep things interesting. We want to continue to be intriguing. You don't want to become boring, even though it's going well. You still want to have some tension and some intrigue. But the Wilkie is just a why I like you statement. It's an idea of what you like about her. It's a declaration of, I like this about you, or I like you because of this. A lot of pickup and dating techniques tell you not to tell girls you like them. And that's good advice in the first 2 minutes. It's bad advice in the first 10. Once a girl's attracted to you, you want to start telling her you like her and giving her reasons that you like her in order to move things forward. This whole like playing indirect and hard to get thing, it doesn't work. All right, so let's recap. We talked about qualification, why it's important. It's important because it cuts down on your flaking, it builds investment, and it finds out if you're compatible with them, right? All of which are very important. We talked about the tools of qualification, bait, hook, reel, release, rapport, pushbacks, compliments, and Wilkies. And we also talked about what happens if you don't qualify, which is sad feelings. So I'm gonna give you an exercise here. And then I'll take a few minutes of questions for those. I zoomed through those.
Good.
All right, so your exercise is to make a list. Write a list of 10 non-physical qualities you want in a woman. It could be personality, it could be job, it could be ambition-based, it could be family-based, but 10 things that are non-physical that you would like a girl you were interested in to have. And then make a list of 10 non-physical qualities that you don't want under any circumstances. Like, for me, my number one thing, you cannot be an actress and date me. You can't. You must have a real job. Not that. And then you want to turn these into bait, hook, reel, release reports. So you want to take those qualities and put them into a bait, hook, reel, release report. That will be the basis of your beginning stage of qualification. That will be something you can take out once you do this exercise and use verbatim every time you're meeting women that will be things you care about, and will also allow you to qualify girls in a way that's tactically effective. All right, so I'll take like 5 minutes of questions before we get to turn it over.
What would be an example of a release?
A release is a non sequitur tease. It doesn't need to be, it's any non sequitur tease. Too bad you're such a dork. I hate you. You suck.
The example you were using she wants to be a lawyer.
Right.
And you're complimenting
it's non sequitur. Do you understand what non sequitur means? It means it doesn't relate to anything you're saying. It is a completely unrelated tease. Your release does not need to relate to anything else. Your teases do not need to make logical sense. Teasing is a purely emotional form of communication. There's no logic to teasing. We get this all the time on boot camps. Guys will be like, but what if there's nothing to tease her on? You don't need a reason to tease a girl. You can just do it. It's emotional. No girl is going to be like, wait, logically, what are you doing? Like,
well,
other questions?
Well, you asked the questions. Can you go back to the slide where you had the...
Which, just let me know which slide.
Rapport. Yeah, the three things you like.
No?
Yeah.
Any other questions on qualification?
Yes. Wait, when do you say this?
After you have attraction and after she's qualified herself, after she has to answer two or three qualifying questions, you can start using statements of intent. But you want to make sure she really likes you before you throw those out there, because once that's out there, you pretty much put all your cards on the table. That'll either escalate or it'll blow things up. Yeah?
Can you integrate the Wilkie as part of the Facebook real release? So can Wilkie be your real?
I mean, it could, but why would you want it? Like, why would you want to do that? Like, why are you trying to get so advanced already? Why are you worrying about changing the tactics? Can you effectively do all of this 100% of the time when you talk to girls? No, then don't worry about changing the fucking techniques. Alright. Next question. Yeah.
How can you tell if, you know, a girl's just being like polite, just making conversation, or she's actually like qualifying so you can actually go to a statement?
Well, you want to move up the range. There's hoops, like there's small hoops, which are like just yes or no questions, like are you adventurous, are you spontaneous? If a girl's a little bit attracted to you, she'll answer those. If she's not answering those, like you're not doing well. Then you have medium hoops, which are like non-yes or no questions, like what do you want to be when you grow up, what nationality are you, what do you do for fun? That's where you're really going to find out whether or not she's being polite or not, because if she's being polite, she'll just give you like pat answers. She'll be like, so what do you do for fun? She'll be like, I don't know, the usual stuff. Or like, you know, what do you want to be when you grow up? Oh, I'm grown up, I already have a job. Like that's where it's going to really hit the road, and then you realize she's going to be polite. Cool. I'll take two more questions. Yeah.
Do you ever disqualify yourself through the interaction?
Yeah, but I mean, never in a serious way. Like, disqualification is not serious. Like, you can't actually, like, seriously tell a girl you're not into her and, like, expect that to work. So, it's always got to be playful. Like, I might go, you know, like, it's never going to work out between us because, like, you know, you're wearing blue and blue killed my family, so. it's got to be obvious that you're making a joke out of it. It works the same way, right? Like, whether or not she actually believes it, the psychological effect is the same. It's the fact that I'm trying to put a barrier up more than that there's an actual barrier. You can't actually, like, trick girls into thinking you don't like them. Like, flirting, teasing, flirting, disqualifying, it's all done with a wink and a smile so that the girl knows you're just messing with her and that you actually like her. Right? Like, flirting, teasing is competent flirting. It's saying something that's sarcastic or slightly mean, but the underlying meaning of the interaction is, I like you. That should always be coming through.
Having really a genuine reason why you don't would say no to a woman is a really important step in the qualification process. Because if you really don't have that, a woman's just not going to buy it. I'm going to talk about that. Qualification is just as much for your inner game as it is to get women. You guys understand that? You're qualifying to genuinely have criteria for which you will not choose a select her. It's important to have that. It puts you in control. It empowers you. This whole take her because she's bangable thing. Come on, guys. You know, we're all adults. As men, we have to have higher criteria and classification other than she has tits and talks. And the talks is optional. You know. Yeah, you can't try and fake this. Ask yourself, can you walk away? It's the old negotiator principle. Can you walk away from the table? If you can walk away, you're in a position of power. If you can't walk away, you're in trouble. You're in trouble. Trump knows this. You read some of his stuff. She can sense when you're too easy and willing, so you got to have discretion and pickiness. Honestly, turn down a bunch of women. It's one of the best things you can do for your self-esteem. Challenging. I want to point out one part of qualification that John didn't touch on that I think is important. There's the qualification. You know, you can ask a woman, are you adventurous? Then you got to follow it up. Follow it up with a challenge. Prove it. Ask that waiter for his phone number. I want to see a girl approach a guy. You know, I'll do this. I'll just challenge her on something and see if she'll follow through on it. And sometimes it's to mess with her. Sometimes it's to have fun. I don't want to make it too serious or it gets a little bit weird. But you do that. Just challenge her on something that she says and have a genuine thing that you can have her do. Oh, you're adventurous? Okay, let me think. Have a little challenge for her to actually do. That takes it from passive to active. And one last thing about qualification. I talked about this way back, a long time ago, and it has stood the test of time. There's something called the tiger's mouth principle in the martial arts. When you become a teacher, you have to have a different attitude towards things, especially when you're teaching kids. Really, really important when you're teaching kids. And that is that kids will push their luck. They'll always push you, and there's always some kid that thinks he can take sensei. And you don't want to drop this kid and have his parents sue you, so you got to be polite about it. But there should always be this fearful respect. Respect always has in it an element of fear. There's always this element, when I say tiger's mouth, what I'm saying is that this kid knows that the tiger's mouth is open, he's putting his head in there, he's like, don't bite down, sensei, don't bite down, you know? And that's the same kind of respect, healthy respect, that a woman should have for you. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So I'm talking very much about the real side of qualification, your internal process of, are you going to choose this woman or not? So the tiger's mouth principle is something you should have in your entire life. There's that limit of take no shit, and people should sense that he could bite down. He could bite down. I got to be careful about that. Does that make sense? All right, I just want to make sure that's in there because I think it's important. And the important thing about that, by the way, is to say it with attitude, not with words. Don't say, you keep that up, I'm leaving. That's cheap threats. Women see that from guys all the time. They don't work. She'll call you on it. All right, conversation skills. Let's get into this because this is something I've been dying to get a hold of here. I get you guys into. I'm going to breeze through some preliminary stuff, and then I'm going to get straight to some exercises that you guys can use. Everybody here heard of AIDA? Attention, interest, desire, action. AIDA. Attention, interest, desire, action. Attention, interest, desire, action. ADA. That is the universal marketing or sales approach. It's the process by which you get somebody to go through a whole sequence of going with it, selling a person. And if there's any place it's like selling, it's pickup. Attention is your opener, your approach. You get her attention. Conversation is about inspiring interest and desire. Okay? Interest is curiosity, so you can get her interest by being curious, because very few guys will ever ask a really good question of a woman. A really good one, and I'll show you how to ask those questions, by the way. They kick ass. Desire is getting emotions into the mix, emotionally invested. She must be emotionally invested in your conversation or you're not going anywhere. This is a really big thing for guys. They walk away with a phone number and they think, yeah, they haven't got shit, because they never got her invested in the first place. Even if the number's real, she'll just never answer it. But if you get her investment, where she feels like she's a part of the process, you will. All right, epiphany here is that don't talk about things with women. Don't talk about physical things and facts. You only talk about experiences and meaning. An experience you had and the meaning that you got from it. Does that make sense? Okay, so think in those terms. It's tough for guys because we're very fact-oriented. We're very logistical. We're very rational. Talk about experiences and meaning. The only thing you need to write down, experiences and meaning. The experiences you've had in your life form great stories. The meaning you got from them is the punchline, if you will. I'll show you about that. I have a really quick, easy, you've ever seen these courses on how to do storytelling? I can sum it up for you in about 30 seconds. Inner or outer game? Is conversation with women an inner game or an outer game problem?
Inner.
Could be both. If you were talking to your buddy, would you have a problem having a conversation or keeping it going? No, we don't. Huh. So why do we have it with women? Okay, now agreed that you're going to have to talk to women slightly differently. You're going to have to modify your approach to get what you want in terms of attraction going. You have to talk in a different way, just like I was saying. Experiences and meaning. But the gender differences notwithstanding, it's the same thing. You just have different expectations on yourself. 99% of the conversation problem is really inner game. So the elements of conversation, if you want to write these down, you can. Write them down quick. The most important elements of conversation to put in: banter, that's back and forth play, full talk. Teasing, as John and I have talked about before already. Sexual innuendo, is important to work in, very important. We have an exercise around that. Touch and Kino. Some guys don't think of that as being part of the conversation, but it is. Touch is really important to have in the conversation. Storytelling, not an absolute necessity, but a good addition when you're ready to put it in there. Power questions, write down power questions because I'm going to give you those. That is probably my big thing that I gave, I think, to this community is power questions. And humor, which all sums up to a three-letter word starting with F. That was fucking late, right? But fun! I'm like, fun. That's like, depressed! Conversation. The point of conversation is one thing with women. Create tension. Create tension. Constructive, healthy, happy, fun tension. Okay, not, oh my God, this guy's crazy tension. Frustration is necessary. Think about it. The frustrating conversations are actually fun and enjoyable for women. They like it. If she's frustrated, you're doing good. She's got to be a little frustrated with you. That's what leads to the playful slaps on the arm. The, oh my God, you know, the rolls of the eyes that are accompanied by the smile. Push creates space to pull. What that means is we push back and push her away from us in the push-pull equation to leave space so she knows that we're not going to run her over. This was a great epiphany I got from one of my ex-girlfriends. She said that to me. I was like, that's brilliant. You should be doing this. She said, the reason we need you to step back is so that we know that you're not going to run us over. I'm like, wow, that's important. Conversational flow. Start out with a fun pattern interrupt to get attention. Pattern interrupts are great. Pattern interrupts are anything you can say that just don't seem to make sense, but break her out of her usual train of thinking. When you're in a nightclub, guys say the same shit over time, her pattern never gets interrupted. The craziest thing, an opener I used a long time ago was Bocephus. I just walk up to her and say, Bocephus. She's like, what the fuck? You know, it's like that crazy look, and you have to be, you know, this is not one you do if you're having trouble with openers. But I'm like, that's what my family wanted to name me, Bocephus. Aren't you glad they didn't? But what did it do? It broke her state, right? She was probably thinking about anything else but that. Start out fun by using humor. Be lighthearted. This is really important because even when some guys are being trying to be fun and funny, they're a little dark. You know what I mean? A little anger, a little edge. I used to do that. As you progress into the conversation, you're going to try to find anchors of common interest and emotional connection. Emotional connection. I'm going to harp on that. So the last bit is you alternate and throw in little ingredients. This is like spice. Of teasing, banter, and other energy elements, okay? So a lot of guys just basically shoot themselves in the foot by starting out way too seriously or being inappropriately funny, way too far on either end of the spectrum. Passion and energy I brought up before. I didn't think I had it in here, but I did, which is good. This is the missing ingredient in most guys' conversations. You must find a way to inject your passion in some form or another. I got a good question from somebody at lunch that said that it was talking about a job. He's an engineer and, you know, was talking about his I said, and she asked you what you do. Well, you don't have to tell her what you do. Here's a really important concept for you guys. You don't have to answer her questions, at least not the way she wants you to. Okay? That's actually a really important part of conversation with women, not answering the way she seems to be asking you. If you literally answer every question that she asks you, you're going to be dead in the water. It's boring. It's dull. It has no fun to it whatsoever. So your answer should be what you want it to be. Remember, that's a lesson in sales. Never answer the question that the person asked. You answer the question you wish they would have asked you. Okay? Laughter is your barometer of interest. You're looking for laughter. That's your barometer. That's your outside signal that she's into it. If she's laughing, and this is like a natural reaction, laughter is her release of stress, so she's going to laugh and let it out. She's going to laugh and want to be like into it. It's her way of going along with you. Watch for laughter. Banter and teasing is your energizer. You banter and tease to get her to laugh. And one big law that'll help you guys that are always so worried about how long should I be talking to her? What happens when we have the uncomfortable silence? Conversations only need to be as long as you want them to be. Really, understand that. You don't have to be abiding by anybody's rules, you know, what is that? Robert's Rules of Order or whatever. There's no rules on this shit. You control that. You control the start. You control the end. Remember when I talked about parentheses? Yes? The opener is your start parentheses, the exit, the eject is your end. If you control those, you control the conversation. Congratulations, you're the proud owner of a conversation. Testing, how do you win? Really quick, I want to go through this because testing comes up quite a bit for guys. They're worried about this whole thing. Why do women test? You can have any number of interesting answers to this. I really don't care, other than the fact that you got to realize that women genuinely enjoy testing. It's fun for them. They love to deny you what you want. Why? Yes, it's related to congruency. It's she determines basically who you are by how you react to her testing and how she, and her denials. Testing is sonar pinging. She tests you and denies you what you want to see how you'll react to it. Ping! What does he do? Ping! Oh, he's that kind of guy. He got all whiny. Ping! You see what I'm saying? Yes? That's how women figure you out. That's how women figure out guys. They test you because that tells them much more. I could ask you, are you the kind of guy that's going to be sincere and stay with me for the rest of my life? What are you going to say? Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, what are we going to say? We're not going to, it's just human nature. We'll say anything. And it's not that we're trying to lie either. But the way to really find out is to do what women do. And it's totally cool. It's the expert way of doing it. How do you win testing? Non-reactive. Do not react to tests. Do not cringe. Do not suddenly lash back or any of that stuff. Here's a good question. This is just a calibration question for guys in their game. Do you get sad when another woman gets sad? Do you find yourself responding emotionally to her emotional state? If you've ever had a girlfriend, do you find it tough to be happy when she's sad? It's really important to answer that one. A lot of guys don't. I know for a long time, I had had a tough time feeling good about my emotional state when she was feeling bad. Now it doesn't bother me at all. She can be totally pissed. I'm not going to be callous and just say, oh, you're pissed. You stay over there. No, I'm going to be sensitive to it and I will talk to her about it, but I'm not going to let it change how I feel. That's really important that you don't let that happen. It's a boundary that must be maintained between you and women. Otherwise, no conversation is going to go good. You're going to be in constant reaction state. Do you understand that? So ask those questions of yourself. Do you get sad when she does? Can you enjoy yourself with her even if she's in a bad mood? Can you stand in silence when a woman makes a demand of you? That's tough. Can you? If a woman tells you to do something or she's demanding, do you feel that twinge of, ooh, I need to do it. Mom just told me to go clean up my room. That's what it comes back to in a lot of ways. You start to feel those old things of being a kid again and mom telling you what to do. A lot of guys cannot say no to a woman.
So what should you do? Just not react?
Well, I can say not do this, and it sounded like I was full of shit because, okay, how do I do that? Because I know you're just saying not do that. But are you asking what do you do when a woman does demand of you? Depends on the demand. Take your clothes off. Yeah.
Okay, I'll do it.
I'll go back in the morning Q&A, okay? I'll come back around to that. Skip tease reflex, attractive conversation. Oh, this is really important. Attractive conversation, write this down. Attractive conversation never goes where a woman expects it to. I said this in different words last night, but this is more appropriate to the way we're talking about today. Attractive conversation never goes where a woman expects it to. Which means the number one rule is to divert, to take tangents. So you got to think on your feet. This is challenging because you do have to maintain a little backlog in your head about what you're talking about and maybe come back to it, maybe not, who knows. You guys know what open loops are. Those are things you start talking about and never finish, which leaves a sense of dynamic, unfulfilled tension, and you need that. Simplified tools for conversation are okay. Memorization is not. Does that make sense? I say that because I really want to make sure that you guys understand that while John gave some great material there about things you can actually say, throw it away as quickly as you can. Maybe use it word for word once, but don't memorize stuff. It'll just get you up in your head, you start being more anxious, and then disaster ensues. Attractive conversation. Here's a rule. Genuine curiosity creates never-ending conversation. Genuine curiosity creates never-ending conversation. If you're really curious about that woman, if you really want to know something more about her, you'll find conversation. You'll never have a problem having conversation. The question is, do you really want to know more about her? This is where, if you're talking to a woman, if you're talking to a woman and it's not somebody you're terribly interested in, it's going to be a struggle. You know, if you're talking to the tits and not to the rest of her, then, and believe me, there's plenty of times I just talk to the tits because she's hot. Yeah. But honestly, you want that element. You have to have that element. If you really want to know her, you can always find out more. That's the basic thing on that. Think about that. When was the last time you had somebody that was genuinely interested in you and asked you questions that really wanted to know something about you? I mean, really wanted to know something about you. It's pretty rare, isn't it? Most of it's the mundane conversation of standing at the grocery store. Did you find everything okay? How are you today? It's this robotic, superficial conversation, which is necessary. Don't get too down on small talk, by the way. You need small talk, but you do that. You just dig in with a good thing. And that brings us to getting her interested in you. Humor and joking. Don't think you have to be a comedian. Don't try to be a comedian, okay? I really do recommend doing improv because it puts you in a mode of what they call acceptance. You know, when they do improv, they hand you something and you can't just say, no, penguins, I can't do anything funny with that. No, you gotta take penguins and make it funny. It's the same thing you have to do in conversation with a woman. Whatever she says, you gotta take it and roll with it, right? Great exercise. And that's one of the best exercises you can do, and you don't even have to be in an improv group. Quickly. Yes, but to a limited degree, because humor is one of those areas that it's very esoteric and very difficult to go into. You may have seen actually, oh no, he didn't have it up there. There's a good book on this that talks about the elements of humor, what they are. The best way to learn how to be funny, honestly guys, I just did it by watching a lot of stand-up and I would just repeat the same shit. I would just copy that what they were doing and having fun with it and repeating it. And it works, because the chances are she's never seen that obscure little comedian that you like, you know, unless it's Dane Cook or something, I don't know. But honestly, just copy stuff for the start to get yourself thinking funny and being funny quickly. Just use stuff that really works. It sounds like a cheap cop-out, but it isn't. Don't use it forever. Just use it as a crutch to get yourself over the hurdle of getting your sense of humor engaged, all right? Storytelling. Oh, arcane talents. Arcane talents. Arcane talents. That's magic. My good buddy Brad Jackson does that quite a bit. Palm reading is one. Best palm reading, by the way, is not real palm reading. It's the made-up shit palm reading. I used to do the real stuff. I learned it. I'm like, the headline's here, the heart line's here, and it doesn't matter because it's more fun to make it up as you go and pretend, and then she realizes, and then she's laughing with you, and she thinks it's more funny this way. It is. It's better that way. Another one is handwriting analysis. I like that one because you really can tell people's personality using their handwriting. Cold reading, especially important. Astrology, girls like it. I'm not so interested in it. I don't use it, but you guys might dig it. And of course, things like the cube, stuff like that. Watch a lot of stand-up, steal all their jokes. All right, power questions. This is the one I'm excited about because I really think these work. I really know they work, and I really know they can work for you. For you. Power questions are questions that evoke, don't write this down, this one's just my wordy explanation. Questions that evoke a visceral, emotional involvement. I just got caught up in my dictionary mode there. Really, they're just questions that make her think a little bit more than, what do you do? Where do you live? What do you like to do when you're not here in the bar? The Book of Questions. Go online at Amazon. You can get it for a penny. A penny. I think it's like $3 shipping, but come on. Honestly, it's a penny. And it's one of the best resources of power questions you can possibly get. They're dilemma questions. You can ask your own variations of them. I'm going to give you some examples. Stock up on them, and I want you to play with the variables. I'll tell you what that is in a minute. Here's one. Very basic one. Where would you live if you could live anywhere in the world? Easy one. Probably almost cliche in its own way, but not. Who has had the most impact on your life? And when I say play with variables, that's a perfect one because after you find out, why? Why did they have such a big impact? I mean, don't ask like, why? No, ask why. How? This is a great one. This one is awesome because these are all qualifying questions, by the way, guys. Your internal qualifying questions. You can look at her answers and also make some decisions about this gal, plus or minus. How did you get into what you do? Don't ask her what she does. How did you get into what you do? And listen to what she says next. And here's one that's more like the Book of Questions questions. These are more dilemma based. So these are fun. These are actually really fun. You can ask your questions like, would you get a tattoo on your arms or, you know, exposed part of your body to save a person's life? She'd be like, ooh, well, I don't know. Can I choose the tattoo? I'm like, no. No, it's got to be an iguana. I'm like, oh. She'd be like, oh. That's what I mean by playing with the variables. You can give and take away. You can say, okay, I'll let you choose. You can choose what you get the tattoo. She'd be like, okay, yeah, definitely. Okay, you see what these do? These are questions I guarantee you that no guy has ever asked her. Nothing in your conversation has to be logical or rational. As a matter of fact, if you don't do it too much insanely, it's actually a really good thing. Don't make your conversation follow any prescribed path, and it'll go better. Now, it does differ on situations. If you're on a first date with a woman, make it a little more normal than that. Try and find some reasons to bring up this stuff. But you can look at her and just, you know, in the middle of something, like after a sip of wine, go, you know what, a friend of mine asked me a really wild question. I'm going to ask you now. That's why. I'm just going to ask her the question. You see why? You don't need to make this a big deal. We make a big deal like, why would I ask her that question, though? Who cares? Ask her the question. This is extremely effective for connection and qualifying. So what I want you to think about, though, is challenging her on areas where she tries to duck out or she tries to sidestep things. That's a really important thing, too. Challenge her on areas that she tries to avoid. She tries to avoid going into a certain area. Say, well, wait a minute. You're about to say something there. What were you going to say? Important, because you're showing some social acuity. See how much effort she puts into her answer. If she's if she's one of these total airheaded chicks, I can tell you right now, women who give you these lame, glib, thoughtless answers, they're going to bore the shit out of you. Just don't even bother. Don't waste your time. It's all about don't waste your time. You guys only have so much time to get through 3.5 billion women, all right? So you got to get busy.
Just like walk away or whatever?
Got a lot to do. Yeah, you just walk away, man. Uncomfortable silence. Here's my technique for handling uncomfortable silence. If it happens, because it still can happen, as much as we try and prevent it, it'll still sneak in just by virtue of the fact that it's waiting out there lurking, waiting to pounce. I do things like, hey, wait, did you hear that? Did you hear that? That was our first uncomfortable silence. We survived it. Cool, high five. And I'll put my hand up and she'll smack it. And it's cool because what am I doing? I'm not trying to cover it over like, la, 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 la. We didn't have that. It wasn't uncomfortable silence. You know, you get that tension. You just trying to throw shit out to make it, to fill the space. Acknowledge it. Make it a fun thing. That's what I loved in Pulp Fiction, where Uma Thurman was talking to John Travolta, and they're in the car in Jack Rabbit Slims. And she's like, isn't that cool? Where you can just like not feel like you have to fill silence with bullshit all the time. And it was cool. It was a genuine observation. Another one I used is, oh my God, we're about to have an uncomfortable silence. You know what happens when that happens, right? We're doomed. Quick, tell me something cool about you. Shift it over to her to fill the silence. Don't make it your responsibility. Just a thought. I don't know. What do you think? And the finish of your conversation. What is the most important thing I've found, for the most part, is I did it right there. Pause. Leave a cliffhanger. Leave things hanging that have not been resolved that she wants to know about you. In other words, the adage of show business is what? Always leave them wanting more. It's really important, and it sounds like a cliche unto itself, but it really does work. Every time I've come to the end of a TV show and it says to be continued, I'm like, don't. You know, it's like a minute away, and you're like, come on, something's got to happen, right? Because they can't leave me. Oh, to be continued. I hate it when that happens. And you know what? Sometimes you don't need anything more to do than just turn and walk away. Just smile, turn and walk away. Remember, you're in control if you want to be. All right, so homework. One thing that you can do, I know there's some guys here that are in various stages of the process, that have various sticking points. For those of you guys that are having problem in terms of just getting into conversations and starting them and feeling comfortable in them, go out and just spend the night focused primarily on the conversation. Literally do not ask for phone numbers. Take that weight of responsibility off of yourself. Because again, we're guys, we want to try and get some result out of it, something tangible. Ooh, I got a number. Numbers are meaningless. The more important thing is that you get comfortable with it. Go for quantity and quality. One will affect the other. So maybe just make a point of making 2-minute conversations. Cut it off. On to the next. Cut it off. On to the next. okay? If you're feeling like you're worried about running out of conversation, you're gonna find yourself like leaving behind conversations you wish you could stay in. Isn't that a good place to be? It's called response potential, by the way. When you leave yourself in a situation of wanting to go back to something that you normally wouldn't have, that's response potential, and it's positive inner game. Homework, create your own reference card. Create your own power questions, memorize them, and put them on the card. This is one thing that I say you could memorize, but don't like memorize word for word, just the essence of the question, like the one I gave you about how did you get into what you do. Easy to remember that one, not too terribly hard. But put them on the card because you will find yourself forgetting it. And then go on Yahoo like 10 minutes before a date and just look at the dumbass stories that they put up there. It's totally aimed at chicks. There's just like these stories you're like, why did they put that, you know? But it's stuff that they would be interested in. So it's like quick reference homework. Before you go out, you just find a bunch of cool stuff and it's instant conversation. Did you see this thing on Yahoo? Mm-mm. I guess we're in our, the common mistakes. Good enough to put up on the board. We're gonna cover some of the common areas where guys have sticking points, stumbling blocks, lots of common questions circle around this. So we're gonna try and weave in some Q&A as we go about it. And we're starting up with flaking.
Yeah, sure. Okay, so flaking is usually the third sticking point guys get. Usually it goes approach anxiety, not being able to get attraction, flaking. So flaking is basically where you get a girl's phone number and she either doesn't return calls or texts, she picks up and she sets up a date and then she cancels like at the last minute, or she sets up a date and she just totally doesn't show up. Flaking is super, super common with cold approach, especially in the beginning. Everyone goes through it. It can be really frustrating though. Like flaking is one of the more frustrating phases because you've already done a decent amount of work to get good at getting attraction and getting phone numbers, and now you're missing out on everything because you can't actually turn those phone numbers into dates or plans. So flaking generally is caused by a couple of different factors. The first one is a lack of qualification. We talked about qualification earlier. When you qualify girls, that cuts down on a huge part of your flaking because the girl actually knows why you like her and why you guys are gonna hang out again, as opposed to just being kind of an undefined thing. So that's the first step for flaking. The second thing is setting up dates, which is actually one of our other topics on the board, so we'll kind of mash these two together. If you qualify correctly, and when I say qualify, I mean you have to get a girl to answer a large qualifying question. Something like, what do you have going for you more than your looks? What's your best quality? What's the coolest thing about you? A question that she wouldn't answer for most people. If you do that and you set up a date, your flaking should go down like 80%. Like just that took care of most of my flaking years and years and years ago. There's a few other things you can do as well. But how do you set up a date? The first thing is you want to seed it. And so seeding is just basically the idea of bringing up the place you're going to invite her to. You always want to invite girls on the same date. I've been going on the same date for like 6 years. And in no way is that depressing. So the first thing I'll do is like, I'll always invite girls. Right now I usually invite girls to karaoke. You want her to pick something. You don't have to do what you invite her to do. A lot of guys get bogged down.
I'm sorry, karaoke first date.
Yeah. Who's on stage? All right. So I'll be like, you ever do karaoke in like the Gaslight? It's this place that's really dirty and gross down in the house. So I'll be like, I'll oversell it, right? You just want to over-describe it. I'll be like, it's amazing. People get up there in capes, like, it's blah, blah, blah. I'll just oversell it, and I'll tell a story that happened there. Usually I'll tell the same story. I'll tell my jealous ex-girlfriend deleted my numbers story. I'll be like, you're not the jealous type, right? You know, last week, you know, me and some friends went to Gaslight. We like to do karaoke there on whatever Wednesday. And I noticed my ex was kind of looking through my phone. And when I got home later, like, I found out she deleted every female number in my phone, like even my mom and my grandma. You're not jealous, right? There's some qualification aspects to that, but the basic idea is I set up the place. It gives me an excuse to oversell this place. The key here is I'm not going to invite her. This is what guys do wrong with this whole overselling concept. They'll oversell a place, and then they'll invite the girl right away. If I oversell something, I'm like, oh my god, it's the greatest place, you gotta go, you're not gonna think it's that cool, because I'm trying to get you to go there. Psychologically, you're like, it can't be that great if you're trying to sell me this hard on it, right? Anyone ever had like, Anyone have a friend who makes the best something or other, and they always try to like shove it down your face? Like, I have a friend who makes the best coffee. He's like, you gotta have this coffee. You gotta have this coffee. I'm like, I'm gonna drink coffee, dude. Every time I go over, right? Could be the best coffee in the world. I don't want someone trying to sell me something. Psychologically, we don't like being sold. So it's much more effective if you oversell it and you don't invite the girl, right? Then, a few minutes later, you want to bring it up again. You say something like, you know, you always want to start your asking girls out with a compliment, right? So I'll say something like, you know, you seem really cool. And, you know, every Wednesday, me and my friends go to karaoke. And here, I'm going to stipulate based on whether it's like a hard number close or a soft number close. So let me explain both those concepts real quickly. A hard number close is like when a girl agrees, like, Wednesday night, 7:30, we're going to karaoke. Like, specific time, specific place, it's really on, right? In that case, I'm always going to invite her specifically. Girls want to feel special on dates for the most part, especially if they're into you. So instead of doing like the typical community thing and being like, why don't you tag along, which is useful, and we'll get to that in a second, you want to say, you know, I'd like you to come with me. You want to make it a little more personal. So Wednesday, 7:30, I'd like you to come with me. Now, if the girl seems more flaky, we call a soft number close. Most of what you guys get are soft number closes. Soft number closes are the ones that flake. So we can talk a little about some anti-flaking stuff in a few minutes. But your soft closes are where it's not really that on. You're really trying to convince her to come to something more than actually setting up a date. That's where you use the I want you to tag along. It's more low pressure. It's not as kind of high intensity. It's just better. So that's kind of hard and soft number closes. So specific date, specific time, invite her. Now what's going to happen here is one of three things. Either she's going to agree and go, yes, absolutely, at which point you get her number because you're like, okay, we'll exchange numbers and I'll call you so we can figure out driving and all that stuff later, right? If she's like, I don't know, you know, call me next week, now you know you probably have a flake on your hands. Doesn't mean for sure she's going to flake, but you now know you need to start using flaking material on this girl. And the third thing that could happen is she could just be like, no, flat out no, and not tell you to call her or offer an alternative day to hang out. Right? Then she's just not interested. So that's basically setting up the date. Most of the time, if you're doing it well, a girl will agree to a specific time, specific place. And when they agree to a specific time, specific place, you get almost no flaking. So you combine that with qualification. That's your first kind of line of defense against flaking. Anything, Carlos?
I want to go back to what you're talking about in terms of not getting the dates. You got to think about, what are dates? What are they really for? A lot of guys, I feel like they pin a lot of undue weight on the date. Like the date is the thing that's going to make or break this thing you have this woman. It's not. Okay, you're still responsible for building attraction. You're still responsible for getting the rapport going. The what you do on the date just fulfills the reason why she's going to go along with you. Okay, so don't use dates as a way to duck responsibility for building more interest and excitement. Okay, you still have that responsibility. A big technique-y thing I like to do that helps me not worry so much about the flakes, honestly, is what I call waterfall method, which is stacking your efforts. You know, you've got to have more than one woman on the rope, right? If you just got this one that you're focusing on, we know about one-itis, but it also comes through in how you approach and handle the setup of the date. And it gets you communicate weirdness in a lot of ways you don't know. Sometimes you got to resell it a little bit. I mean, big mistake I get with guys is they wonder why she's flaking, and when they get on the phone with her, even if they do manage to set a date, they don't really remind her about how fun it was to know him the last time he was with her. So what's happening there? There's a big disconnect. You're not giving her a reason why. WIIFM. Why should she fucking go out with you on a date? She can go out with you, a ton of her girlfriends, and have a lot more fun than you. Did you remind her about why? Okay, really important there. As far as flaking is a pre-existing condition. You know, like they say in medicine, a lot of the reason comes down to just not having established that connection. That investment we were talking about, the qualification goes a long way towards that. You got to have that investment. There's also the element of flaking that when you overqualify or you make it just seem a little bit too, it's oversold. A woman is always aware that relationships are a double-edged sword, right? What can a date lead to? Could lead to sex, could lead to a relationship, could lead to all that. They want them, but each one of them means a possibility of pain for her. So she senses that is like starting down that familiar path. she's going to freak a little bit. So you can qualify yourself right out of the game. She can flake on you just based on the fact that you're the best thing that's come along in a while. I've had that, and that makes me beat my head against the wall. Like, I was exactly what she said she was looking for. It started to follow the pattern of the last fucked up relationship. And you know, there's that X factor. We talk about the X factor, about why did she flake? There could have been, you know, not enough interest. A better guy could have come along. There's all a bunch of ways about it, but don't worry too much about that. It's just that pre-existing thing. Always give her what she wants. Resell the energy. And remember that this principle of motivation, I tell this one to women actually more than guys, because I actually have talked to women, groups of women about this sort of thing. Remember, this is the principle of motivation. If you want it enough, you will pursue it. Okay? She doesn't turn you down because she wants the date. She doesn't flake because she wanted the date. She turned you down because she wasn't into it. So if you're ever in that quandary of, oh man, you know, you find yourself chasing after the women that aren't responding to you, okay, it's the hard to get thing, which is the bullshit part of us that we get caught up in, let it go. Because remember, if she's interested, she will do something about it. She will respond. You don't have to be the one selling your soul for a little bit of her time. It never has to be that way.
Yeah, I call it the rule of threes. Basically, there's a lot of schools of thought when it comes to like how many times a girl not calling you back before you just like toss the number and move on. Some guys are like, if a girl doesn't call me back once, then I like next her. That's stupid. That's dumb. But then on the other hand, you don't want to call for like 8 years. So for me, it comes down to a rule of threes. This is just something I use in my own life that I've been teaching for a couple of years. Basically, if a girl, like call a girl and she doesn't call me back 3 times, I'm done. If I text a girl and she doesn't text me back 3 times, done. If I try to set up a date with a girl and she flakes 3 times, done. You know, anything, any of those combination happens 3 times, like, I'll just be done with it. Like, 3 times, it's enough that she's really not interested and you're going to have to work way too hard to get this girl out. So, that's a good general rule.
Total or in a row?
I'm sorry?
Total or in a row?
Total. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, if she shows up, like, actually on the date, then that's fine. But I mean, if like she doesn't return a text, and then you call and she doesn't call you back, and then you get her on the phone and you set up a date and she doesn't show up, done. Sure. Like it could be all three of the different ones, but any three of those combinations, you just don't want it. You don't want to establish a pattern where you're chasing, right? That's really important. So in terms of phone and text game, the first thing that's really important is having a follow-up system. You want to put all your numbers through the exact same system. So I'll send, you know, first you want to send a pinging text message, either the night you meet them or the next day if you met them during the day. And this is just something to kind of, A, like, you want to make sure you get your name and number in their phone. That's a really important thing for flaking because girls just don't pick up numbers they don't know. So what you want to do is when you get a phone number, when you exchange numbers, however you want to do it, like I said, the best way to do it is just be like, okay, so let's just exchange numbers so we can figure out who's driving and all that. You want to make sure that you call her. You'd be like, all right, I'll call you, and you get my phone number, I'll call her ID. Or even better, you can get her phone and call yourself and like put your name in with like a funny name or something. Like I'll put like Awesome John or something like that. That's good. Because the whole thing with the phone is you don't want to assume that you're the only guy she has a number to. You don't want to assume that she's going to know you right away. So you want to ping. So I'll say something like, hey, do you speak text, smiley face, John, right? And if she texts back, cool, I don't need to go back and forth a bunch of times. I just want to make sure that this is the number she's going to respond to. Now, after I send a text message, whether or not she responds. If she responds, I'll call her the next day. If she doesn't respond, I'll call her the next day. The next day, you want to call. Cold approach, you call the next day. It's a cold approach. You don't. There's no hooks in her life to make her have to call you back or anything. So you've got to strike while the emotional momentum is highest. So call the next day. Don't remind her of where she met you, but try to use like inside jokes and callback humor. Like I always give girls nicknames. This is a good anti-flaking thing. So I'll give the girl a nickname, and then when I call her up, I'll be like, "Hey, princess," and she, you know, knows who it is. If you get asked who it is, don't try to get cute and do like cocky, funny stuff or anything like that. Just be like, "Oh, it's John from last night," and brush it off. Like when you draw more attention to that stuff, you lose points. Because you're drawing attention to the fact, even if you have the best answer in the world, you have the best value money line, like, oh, you don't remember like this, that, or the other, you're still drawing attention to the fact that she didn't remember you. You don't want to draw attention to the fact that she didn't remember you. Now, what if you get a voicemail? Ideally, I'd like to get voicemail when I call. Because how quickly she calls back tells you a lot about how interested she is. If she calls back within 2 hours, she's really interested. My old My old saying from when I used to work in the mystery method office years and years ago was that girls with boyfriends do not call you back in less than 2 hours. Like, because sometimes you get girls who tell you they have boyfriends or like are in serious relationships, and then they call you back like half an hour later. I'm like, girls with boyfriends, they don't call you back in 2 hours. So 2 hours is good, and it's really on. But more than 2 hours, like to a full day, it's on enough that she calls you back. If she doesn't call you back, you want to start using what I call phone freeze out. And phone freeze out is pretty simple. Let's say I meet a girl, and I call her on a Monday, she doesn't call me back. I'm not gonna call her Tuesday, but I'll call Wednesday. Let's say she doesn't call me back again, I'm not gonna call Thursday or Friday, but I'll call Saturday. And there's my three calls. If she doesn't call a third time, done. You always just wanna add a day. That's how you avoid being needy. You also don't ever wanna send two forms of communication. Like if you call the girl and she doesn't pick up, don't text her. If you text her and she doesn't text you back, don't call her. There's something I like to call my intimacy ladder, right? And basically, intimacy starts in person, that's the most intimate, then it's voice-to-voice on the phone, text messages, email, and then IMs and Facebook, right?
Getting day twos with women is obviously another big step for guys. Another one of those escalation steps is getting that second dates. Right, you get on the first date, now you want the next date. And a lot of guys have a stumbling block in between there. And then getting her home. There's a concept of scared money. You guys know what scared money is? Scared money is a gambling concept. It comes from when you're at the table and you just don't have enough money to play with, or you're just too protective of what you got to be able to bet it efficiently or effectively. You know, at any point in the game, you gotta be able to go all in for you guys to play any Texas Hold'em. There's times when you just gotta go all in. I've been with guys that we just started playing. The blind has only gone up twice and he's already all in on a bunch of hands. I'm like, God damn, dude. But he's not playing scared money. And the same thing applies to how you escalate. If you're always trying to conserve something, if you're always afraid of that risk you're putting out there, that thing that you might lose, right? And she can sense it. Other players sense it when you gamble. She can sense it for sure when you're interacting with her. How many of you guys feel like, without going into too much graphic detail here, you feel like you can do okay in the sack? Now, be really honest here, because almost everyone of us will glibly just say, yeah, I can stick my dick in her. That's not sex, okay? You know, that's just the tip is the way most guys start their sexual experience, and from there it becomes, oh, I fell in there, and now I'm, oh, it's over. Really, can you give her pleasure? Can you do the competent things? Raise your hand. Good, okay, good. If for any reason you don't, one of those things I talked about was the reverse anxiety. You know, you got an anxiety about, if you do have this anxiety, and you may have raised your hand, that's cool, don't worry about it. I'm not here to embarrass you. But you do need to take care of it, because having that anxiety all the way out at the end of the path is gonna translate itself all the way back to the start, and you're never gonna feel comfortable at any point down the chain. So you gotta get that handled. And you know what, if you pay for it, fuck it. Okay, so you pay for it. I was watching some movie recently where they were joking about this kid being a virgin. He's like, I'm not a virgin. He goes, paying for it counts too. He's right, you know, I mean, and you gotta do what you gotta do. Here's something that's a good tip for you guys. If you have a lot of need built up around women, and this is kind of off the topic a little bit, but it does help because neediness kills all this shit. If you feel like you have a lot of physical need that you're not getting satiated by women, this is a big one for guys, because how else can you get it but getting it from women? Just get regular massages. Getting just a good shiatsu, any kind of massage from a woman preferably, but getting massages where you get that physical contact can satisfy a lot of that weird, freaky need that might make us a little bit weird in interactions with women. You know what I'm talking about, right? Where you're not so calibrated with your kino. You don't know when to touch, how to take it away, how to be cool with it, or how to not be edgy. Getting massages regularly takes that a lot of that out of the equation. And believe me, it's an important thing, because chicks can know when you ain't getting any. And if you can do anything to abate that needy little vibe, it's really important.
All right, so sexual escalation. Couple things, just something, again, I'm gonna give you a brief overview here. The first thing, there's three forms of escalation. They are verbal, physical, and logistical. So, verbal escalation sexually is going to escalate in terms of qualifying, sexual qualifying, statements of intent, and eventually dirty talk. Those are your four kind of tools for verbal sexual escalation.
Can you say that one more time, Jim?
Sure. they're qualifying, sexually qualifying. Qualification we talked about earlier, obviously. Qualification escalates the interaction because it demands more investment from the girl and gets her to invest in the interaction. So that escalates and it makes it more intimate. Sexual qualification is where you start to qualify her sexually. That's not done, it's not really done the same way that regular qualification is done. It's a little more of an advanced topic, so I'll just touch on that for now. Just write it down, and later on, as you guys get better, you can worry about that. Statements of intent, which we covered earlier. Statements of intent are where you basically give your intent in the future tense with some distance and objectivity to let the girl know how you're going to act. Statements of intent work on what I call passive frame control. When you're out talking to girls and you're controlling the frame, there's active ways to do it where, like, I'm teasing or I'm cutting someone off or I'm changing the subject, and there's passive things. Passive frame control happens when someone just doesn't object. So, for instance, if I say, you know, I'm trying to get in your pants to a girl, and she laughs and goes, well, at least you're honest, which is what 99.999% of girls do, she's now passively accepted the idea that I can escalate on her. When I try to kiss her later, she's not going to be surprised, right? This is how we prep. Escalation is mostly about prepping the girl for how you're going to act later when escalation comes. So there's SOIs, that's your big prepping tool. Statements of intent, letting her know what's coming next. And then you have dirty talk eventually. Dirty talk, it's like playing with like an explosive substance of some sort. Sometimes it goes really good, sometimes you blow interactions with it. You have to be really calibrated to use it. When you know how to use it, it's a really good tool. I'm not going to sit here and do dirty talk for you because I think that's fucking weird. I used to teach with an instructor who, like, on the third day of boot camps, would, like, sit here and make really strong eye contact with the guys and do dirty talk. And be like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to put you against the wall. I'm like, so I'm not going to do that. There are plenty of resources out there on dirty talk. Worst comes to worst, listen to the Whisper song by the Yin Yang Twins. They'll give you some real basic ideas. So that's verbal escalation. Verbal escalation is really my specialty. I personally think physical escalation should be used for teasing. You need to physically escalate to a certain point, which is a makeout, and then after that you want to use less physical stuff and more teasing physical stuff, meaning you touch her, you start to turn her on, and take it away, which I think I detailed in the seduction roadmap, which most of you guys got. But physical escalation, you want to have a structure for physical escalation. So I'll give you a basic one here. The first thing you want to do is what's called playful touching. Playful touching is taps, back of the arm touching, anything that's attention-getting touching, pushing a girl away, flicking her, anything like that. That's the first form of touching you want to get, just something playful in the shoulder to elbow region. Then you want to get some hand touching. The best way to do hand touching is high fives, because high fives come with a built-in test for whether or not the girl's attracted to you. You high five a girl and she clasps your hand like this, she's attracted to you. Start qualifying her. Don't you start doing that. There are a lot of guys, they learn that and then they start clasping the girl's hand. Don't do that. That's mean and creepy. But high fives are a great thing. I might be like, you guys having fun tonight? High five. All I want to do is get her used to touching my hand and see if she's going to clasp, see if she's attracted. Then, I might do like an arm around. This is as much as I'm going to do in a group. If I'm in a group of girls, the most I want to do is put my arm around her because I don't want to creep her friends out. So when I put my arm around a girl, if her arm doesn't come back around, I push her away. The key to physical escalation is the release. This is the key to touching. We talked about comfort thresholds earlier, right? Every woman is going to have physical comfort thresholds. That means no matter how good your game is, no matter how much she likes you, she's going to reach a point where physically she's uncomfortable with a stranger touching her. Now what we want to do is we want to get her right to that point and then take away all touching. We want to, in essence, remove all touching, because what happens is she'll actually become more uncomfortable being rejected. She'll become more uncomfortable with all touching being removed than she was with the escalation. And that's how that comfort threshold moves back. And that's how women start to chase physically, and that's how you avoid being the creepy touchy guy. What most guys do is they treat touching like it's the Notre Dame offense in the 1930s, like 3 yards in a cloud of dust, right? Like they go here, girl moves their hand. They go here, and they're constantly chasing. Instead, as soon as you feel muscular tension, as soon as you feel her be uncomfortable, push her away. Take the contact away completely. If I put my arm around a girl, it doesn't come back, take it away.
How much of a push?
Like It doesn't have to be a real push. Like sometimes I will actually push girls. There's a funny boot camp review where one time this girl I was making out with did something bitchy and I like shoved her hard enough that like she fell over. That was like a 2005 boot camp review. I ended up going home with her though, so you can't push girls over and stuff like that. But yeah, I mean like the idea is you're taking the touching away, you're rejecting her, right? Instead of continuing to try. Because one of the two of you is going to chase, right? And whoever chases has lost control of the physical escalation. So we always want to be removing the touching. If it's starting to go too fast, stop, slow it down. Ironically, you get laid faster by slowing things down than you do by trying to go fast. It's a weird counterintuitive thing.
Yeah, being able to.
So after kind of arm around, then you have like hand holding. The best way to do hand holding is when you're isolating. I like to put my touching along with what's happening at the time. So when you're trying to isolate a girl, you can just stick your hand back as you're walking. Most girls will grab your hand at that point, especially in a bar or club where it's crowded. Then you have like a hug test. So what I'll do is like basically I want to get her to hug me to get her comfortable with body-to-body contact. So while I'm qualifying, when we're in isolation, when she says something I like, I'm like, oh my god, I love you, hug. And then however she hugs, I'm gonna tell her it's a bad hug. I'll be like, oh my god, you're a terrible hugger. And she'll be like, what? No, I'll be like, yeah, you give me like the ass out like pat hug. I'm like, don't fool me. I'm like, I know a platonic friend hug when I see it. She'll be like, no, let me do it again. I'll be like, alright, I'll give you one more chance. And then they'll usually give you a good hug. And then for kissing, you don't need a kiss close. I like this one, I've been using it for forever, so I'll teach it real quick. It's the almost kiss. Basically, it goes like this. You go, all right, while she's talking, you're in isolation. Kissing should not happen before 25 minutes. If you try to kiss a girl before 25 minutes, it's too fast. Like, it can happen, but it's going to be real fluky, and it's usually not a good idea. You want to wait like 25 minutes so that she doesn't go into, like, buyer's remorse mode, where she's like, oh my god, I made out with that guy so fast. Like, not a good thing. So, 25 minutes in, while she's talking, I'll say something like, you know, I'm having a really hard time concentrating right now because I'm really just thinking about kissing you. I know that's not appropriate right now, so here's what we're going to do. We're going to do an almost kiss. Pinky swear, you're not going to kiss me, I'm not going to kiss you. We're going to get really close and hold it, and then that's it. And then I'll get really close, and I'll push her away. And then 5, 10, 15 minutes later, I'll be like, you know what? I think I'm ready for another almost kiss. And then the second time, the girls almost always kiss you, which is why I like that one, because it makes the girl escalate. So that's a really good kiss routine to build some sexual tension. But that's basically what you want to get through doing in a pickup. After that, you want to start pulling back the physical escalation and doing more of that teasing, arousal touching that I talk about in the seduction roadmap. And then logistical escalation. So logistics is another one of our topics here. Logistics are pretty simple, but complicated at the same time. Did you have anything to add to physical escalation?
Not really, and I follow on with 100% of that. It's pretty much what I do.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. So logistical escalation, you're basically talking a couple different things, right? You're talking two different maps and the first meeting, right? So your first logistical escalation is what? You meet the girl in a group or you meet her by herself. What's your first logistical escalation?
Isolation.
Moving her. Isolating or moving, right? That's your test for attraction. That's how you're going to find out, okay, I'm moving out of the attraction phase. I'm going to now sit down and qualify this girl.